Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We'll fight to the death. We are soldiers. We are soldiers.
Coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk. Also, thank you for those who have been going to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com and going to the Get Involved page and pushing that little red button that says Save an Elephant, in which that has taken folks to the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, which for only $50 a month, and I think this would be a great Christmas present, and it is, to sponsor a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers over in Africa. And, of course, these elephants are being killed for the ivory of their tusks, and which the money that goes towards there is to fund much of the killings that are going over there. We're seeing, of course, a lot of innocent people over there in Africa. But as I said, for only $50 a year, it is a great gift. And so I believe the person who was the sponsor will get some photos and some updates about the elephant that they are sponsoring. And it's for a great cause, and it's not for a lot of money to do so. And, of course, as I said, once again, you can see find that at the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And tonight we're going to have kind of a continuing conversation of last night's show, covering the history of gun control. We also talked about the Second Amendment and, of course, the shootings, the recent shootings that have been going on. And so if you missed that show, just go to the archives and you can find it there, as well as you can find in the archives a show where we interviewed some of the folks from the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. And also you'll hear there a Julia Newman, which is a composer we are going to be interviewing sometime early January, in which some of the folks may be familiar with the works if they, of course, listen to some of the more recent videos, rescue videos from the David Shardwick Wildlife Trust. And you've probably also heard some of her works on the TV series Bones. And also, which was some years ago, she also composed some of the music, or the music that was heard on the movie I Am Legend. So I'm really looking forward to having Julia here on the show. So tonight, we're going to talk about the National School Shield Emergency Response Program. And, of course, tonight, as every night, callers and chat participation are welcome. And we'd like to start off by saying and wondering how we can protect our president and our Congress, our celebrities, our sporting events, our buildings, and armed guards and banks to protect our money, but not our children in our schools. But tonight we will discuss a new model, which is a non-governmental model, in protecting America's school children. And, of course, folks are welcome, as I said, once again, to join into the discussion. And at this time, I will open up the mic to someone I'm sure everyone here is well familiar with. And also, he is the owner of the page Coalition of Freedom that could be found on Facebook. So check that out. Once again, that is the Facebook page. Just put this in your search engine, Coalition of Freedom. So at this point, and without any further ado, I will be opening up Chris's mic. Chris, thank you for calling in. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Good, good. I thought perhaps what wasn't originally slotted, as you know, to have a show tonight, but I had to postpone some Christmas plans. And while I've got that on my mind, I'd like to wish everyone in the audience, whether they've listened to it live or will be listening to this later, a very Merry Christmas. Or if you're listening to this after Christmas, I hope you had a Merry Christmas. So that being said, as I said, I had to postpone some of the plans I originally have tonight. So as you've suggested, Chris, about having a show tonight to go over this topic, I agree it's a great idea to do so. So here we are.
Oh, sorry, man. I'm like trying to catch up and get your show posted on 30, 40 more groups. And I was just reading some comments and stuff that people are leaving already.
Yeah, I put it on Twitter and things of that nature. So go ahead.
What a hell of a topic for Christmas, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And let me start out by saying that for all the folks over there in Connecticut and, of course, everywhere else that have experienced that kind of loss, especially, it's horrible at any time, but, of course, you know, it's even more pungent when, you know, something like that happens this time of the year. So, of course, I'd like to offer my condolences to all the folks for their loss, you know, and the tragedies that that has occurred. So I wanted to just go ahead and put that out there before we start tonight. Thanks, Chris.
No problem. I'm going to bring up the program. There it is. I've got the text of it, you know, so we're not trying to guess as we go. Do you have it? Do you have the transcript? Are you there? Hello? Robert. I'm going to call back in case it was me. Yeah, we have technical problems going on right now. Rob, if you can hear me.
I can hear you. There you go. There you go. It looks like, yeah, we've got it back. We've got it back. There we go.
I think it was Rex's fault. I see him out there in chat.
Yeah, well, yes, I do. Speaking of Rex, of course, that is the one of the hosts of the Tex and Rex Show, which folks can listen to live on Sunday evenings between 10 p.m. and midnight. So, but now we've got, yeah, BTR. There we go. When in doubt, always blame Rex. Well, that's what I say.
No, that's what I do.
But no, we're just talking, you know, just reiterating some of the things we were discussing last night for the folks who might not have listened or was here for last night's show about, you know, it's just amazing how, and we're going to touch, of course, more on this tonight, and, you know, how we've got all the security all over the place for, you know, even, you know, celebrities and sporting events and even buildings and banks, and you even see security guards in grocery stores. I mean, how many times have you gone to a grocery store and you've seen, you know, especially, you know, you've seen armed guards there, you know, or at least one armed police officer.
You weirdos up in Ohio.
Well, you know, I guess it's not in all the neighborhoods. Well, it's not in all the stores. I guess it's just in some neighborhoods that I have seen armed police officers inside the grocery store.
Oh, great. Well, here's something. You know, I did the radio show with Randy and his crew this morning, and then I came back and finally got the NRA speech and had a chance to sit down and watched it. And I was just, well, you heard when you called me or when you pulled me up on chat, I'm like, calling you, you know, I was all fired
right.
up. And the reason is because, you know, what was interesting is my son was listening to our radio show that we did last night. And at the beginning of the show, before Kelly came on and before Randy came on, and I was in my early rant, and I was talking about, you know, the fact that we have, you know, retired military, retired police officers, you know, war vets and people who would love, you know, that believe in this country and believe in the right to protect your fellow citizen, are willing to take responsibility for it, would jump at a chance to volunteer to do it. Well, what's funny is this new program that the NRA laid out, you know, which you know, I'm waiting for the acronym because it's definitely too many words, like all things. But, you know, they're going to essentially throw all their resources, their vast resources. I mean, they have 11,000 legal, you know, firearm trainers. I mean, they are a large organization, been around a long time, a lot of resources, a lot of information. You know, obviously in an organization like that, there's going to be a lot of ex-military, ex-police, you know, that'll be involved. There's a tremendous amount of brain trust. But, you know, if you think about it, there are people who give a crap about not only the right to bear arms and the right to protect yourself and your family and your fellow citizen and your neighbor, but the sense of responsibility for it, because those are really two different psyches. And I think that's important to understand in any of these conversations, that nobody's talking about running out there and forcing people to, you know, put a gun on their hip, because I would not want a fearful person with a gun on their hip or in a holster, you know, concealed, whatever. I believe in properly trained, you know, stable-minded people, you know, taking up the vest of responsibility, you know, to be part of what this country was founded on. Now, you know, somebody's going, oh, you're a gun nut. You know what? I'm not a gun nut. I don't carry a gun. I don't live and breathe and go to the gun club every week. I don't hunt anymore. Yeah, I lived in Alaska half my life. I owned a ton of guns because it just seemed to be a thing you did, and you had multiple environments, you know, and you go through guns, and I probably ended up with a lot of guns in my youth because you know, Alaskans, they'd make money in the summer fishing, logging, whatever. And they'd be broke in the winter looking for money. And you know, everybody buy a bunch of guns when they had a bunch of money. And then in the winter, they're all looking to sell them. So you end up with an armory. I remember having an armory in my youth of multiple types of guns. But I really boiled it down to just a handful of very key weapons. You know, one or two had to do with safety. The rest of them had to do with hunting and large game, you know, that would eat you if you weren't properly armed, called Alaskan brown bears and black bears, which are very deadly up there. They're not skittish creatures like they are down here. They're actually more apt to kill you than a brown bear is. Brown bear will gnaw on you a little bit and, you know, bat you around and then leave you out of boredom, where a black bear tends to kill you, at least the Alaskan personality. But, you know, I've been around guns all my life. My dad was a Korean War vet. My family goes back probably every conflict in this country all the way back to the pre-founding. And it's just, it was like a no big deal for me. I was in the Boy Scouts. We hunted. We learned about guns. We learned about safety. My dad reloaded. And it was just a part of our life. We never thought twice about, you know, like, it's just what you did. And it, what is amazing to me in this environment today that we have such a mass of people who are so far removed from the right and responsibility of protecting yourself. And that's what's interesting to me, because I've watched, you know, I have a martial arts background. I've trained survivalist stuff, you know, surviving in the wilderness. You know, I've done all that kind of crazy stuff. And it's amazing how many people can't get through a damn four-way red light when the power goes off. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is an important distinction in the society that we live in today. These people freaking out. There was a, I just saw an article before we got going here, of a 23-year school veteran in Minnesota. Yeah, Minneapolis, Minnesota, brought a gun to school, put it in a locker, had one chain, you know, and here's a responsible gun owner. Gun owner, you know, licensed, legal to carry, had one empty chamber in a six-shooter, which is overkill, because if you talk to somebody like me, I want all six shots. You know what I mean? But, you know, make sure that main chamber where the hammer's resting doesn't have a shell in it, put it in a locker, locked it, told one of her fellow, must have been a liberal, staff members, and that person turned her in, and the whole world goes upside down, and this staff member brought the gun in because of the shooting that occurred in Connecticut and felt a sense of responsibility, even though, here's the problem, it's against the damn law. So you can't even do what's right without it being wrong in this society today. Right. I don't know if you watched the interview with Larry Pratt and that British guy that really needs to go back to Britain. What's his name? The television personality.
Oh, man. Yeah, we were talking about last night. I'm trying to remember his name.
Yeah, he's easy to forget. But anyway, Larry Pratt, you know, was laughing at him. You know, and Piers Morgan just got inflamed because he just said the stupidest thing, and Larry cracks up. Well, he's the head of a gun organization, and he was the guy that was supposed to be on Randy's show this morning that we were going to interview and have a conversation with. And who knows, with everything that's going on, he probably just got waylaid, you know, and busy. But it is amazing to me that we have the numbers of murders that we have in this country, the inner city problems that we have in this country, the statistics which go far beyond guns. What?
No, good. It sounded like the mic was breaking up a little bit, but it's back.
But, you know, the statistics that go beyond guns, I mean, knives and sharp objects, hands and feet, blunt objects. Then let's get into rape and assault numbers. You know what I mean? And then it just goes sky high. And you look at the statistics, the crime statistics, and all of the focus is on one guy who I believe, quote unquote, based on what I've read, waiting for truth to come out, was on psychotropic drugs, schizophrenic medicine, like the rest of these guys are.
Yeah,
and these people, go ahead.
What are they trying to train him for? So I thought I heard someone say they were training for like ADHD or something like that, or autism.
No, well, autism, but I know somebody whose daughter has that form of autism, and you don't give them that drug.
Right,
They were giving him. This was a psychotropic, you know, schizophrenia drug. So, you know, here's the point, and you said it so well in the beginning, and it really comes off of the transcript of that speech today, that a gun is okay if it's protecting our president or our Congress. In fact, when Gabby Gifford got shot, you know, there was this big cry that all Congress make sure they have Secret Service. Well, what is Secret Service going to do? You know, jump in front of them with their bulletproof vest? No, they're armed. So that's okay. You have armed guards on inert property that has no life value. That's okay. You have armed guards, anything to do with our fake money, you know, the U.S. dollar, our fake money, you know. You have armed guards everywhere there is anything of value in this country. You have armed guards at stadiums. You have you know,
right.
Anywhere you go with the whole Homeland Security thing, with the terrorism attacks, you know, you have all of this discussion. And the one place where our greatest resource is at, our children, the future generation of this country, we can't have that discussion. And that's what's going to be the argument.
And they're gun-free zones. Yeah, gun-free zone. It's like,
you know
what
person,
a person who's going to go to a school with a gun isn't going to give a flying you-know-what about whether there's a sign in the door saying gun-free zone. They're going to bring it in there. You know, that's not going to deter it. That's not going to deter anybody who wants to come in, you know, and cause havoc and, you know, death, you know. It's not going to stop them.
Well, that's where they're going to go. I mean, they're going to go where they know that they're – I mean, these people are cowards, you know, and we talked about this last night. They're double cowards. They attack innocent people, and then they kill themselves. So they're a double coward. And so that type of mindset – doesn't give a crap about your rules. The only gun-free environment is an environment like an airport that's totally caged in with roving security guards, police all around them, and limited entries that you have to pass through and be searched, molested, I mean, patted down. You know what I'm saying? That's a gun-free zone. The only people who have guns in that area are the guards, the police, and the people are supposed to have them. But they're not really gun-free because those people do. But that is the only way you can create a gun-free environment is a totally self-contained environment with limited access. So this concept of a sign or a law that says gun-free, all that's doing, and this guy nailed it in this speech today, he said all you're doing is telling these psychomaniacs, that's my word, where to go kill people at. Now, you see, I don't have a political position, and I don't give a crap if anybody likes me or not, so I'm going to call it a little bit more straight up. And he had to be a little more careful, you know, because he runs a big organization.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a crap, you know. I mean, this is insanity that we're even having this discussion. I mean, ask yourself this, Robert. 9/11 happened. This whole country, it hurt us economically. It hurt I mean, it was a massive, massive event. Look at the changes
right.
in our laws, our freedoms, the money that's spent, the endless war on terror, NDAA, Homeland Security, TSA,
right.
all these things that we live with today over one event.
These marshals in the plane.
Like, yeah, and my dad, I don't think I've talked about this much on the radio, but, you know this. My dad was a nuclear physicist.
Right.
And one of the last projects that they worked on was putting these sniffers in all the ports and access ways into this country, which would have been airports that have international flights, you know, ports, you know, border crossings, whatever. This was part of the whole Homeland Security environment. And these are basically nuclear sniffers so that nobody can come
right.
across the border with a dirty bomb. Well, my dad was one of his last projects he worked on before he retired. So you think of the money and the expense and the fear and the focus and the politics and the wars and the military and the death and attacking other countries and everything that we've done. And we have to argue over whether or not it's a good idea to put armed guards in our schools. That's freaky conversation, and I never thought in my lifetime we would ever have that discussion.
Excuse me. Replying. I was just replying to a tweet there. But, yeah, and that's something we need to. And I know there's some folks like, oh, well, you know, what kind of environment is that for, you know, students to be in? I'm sorry?
Who would say something that stupid?
Yeah, well, I've heard it. They're like, oh, what kind of environment would that be if, you know, kids
what kind
through,
of
you know, go through and see someone carrying a gun? It's like, really? It's like maybe, you know,
you
they'll feel
me?
Safe or there's somebody there to protect
them
or something like this happens.
You walk down the street and you see a police officer with a gun. What the hell's the difference?
Yeah, but look,
you go to a bank and you have a bank guards with guns. I mean, it isn't like this is some weird thing that doesn't occur in society. We all know there are lines that can't be crossed. There are people you don't mess with. You know what I mean? I mean, we. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy, in his thing, when he talked about, he said, by the time somebody's 18 years old, they've seen 200,000 murders in their lifetime via TV, video games, news. You know, I mean, we are bombarded with death and destruction every day. Look at our movies we watch, our video games we play. What kind of fool would say something like that? Children are that, live in that kind of bubble, that walking mm-hmm. into a school, they see the national news. The news is promoting this 24/7 right now. You don't think your kids aren't hearing this? It's all over the internet. It's the number one topic of America right now, instead of the good news, Christmas, right? You mm-hmm. don't think your kids are already exposed to this? How about thinking about it from a logical standpoint and showing your children that we care enough about your damn life that we put this good guy here who's licensed, bonded, and trained to protect you? Isn't that a positive message instead of them seeing what a guy can do who just decides to walk into school and kill people? What message is that? What message is it to a child to see a teacher give up their life trying to protect that child, and that really is just becoming a body bag?
Right.
What kind of message is that? How about the hero who stands up and takes one of these guys down? I have not had time to go through this, but I have all these mm-hmm. magazines, my son's NRA magazines, and American Rifleman and stuff, and they're the only place that you get postings of articles of people who saved people's lives or thwarted crime, private citizens who are armed. You don't hear it in the news. That's a hero story.
Well, there was a short discussion. I know, you know, what one of the past times when, you know, someone came in and, you know, was shooting up at school. I think it might have even been the Columbine shootings. Remember those?
No, it wasn't that one. It was a different one where a guy went out. The guy had shot a bunch of people and was heading to another school, and then the guy ran out to his car and got a gun, and he stopped the guy.
Well, yeah. I believe after the Columbine, what I was going to say is, I believe after the Columbine shooting, there was a discussion, and it was a very short-lived discussion, and one that I think that should be brought back, is the discussion of having teachers. I mean, I agree with armed guards and they're trained. Of course, have teachers who can volunteer to be trained in using a gun, you know, where, hey, you keep it in a locked, you know, desk somewhere or what have you. You know, but there was a conversation that started to come out of that, but then it was very short-lived and it was really pushed down.
That was the head of the NRA that gave the speech today, and he got the crap kicked out of him for even discussing it.
Yeah, well, as I said, that's definitely a discussion that needs to come back, it's not a part of the agenda of disarming, you know, the American people, disarming
America.
The citizens, right?
Well, you know what I see from a political standpoint, when he threw the gauntlet down, and everybody should listen to this thoroughly, one, just start to finish, listen to it, and read the transcript so there's no confusion, and listen to what the man has to say, because he nailed it. There's several different events here. One is he said, which is very true, the NRA decided to stay back out of the news, and they were being attacked, and, you know, the whole gun rhetoric and anti-gun crowd, and, you know, this is the NRA's fault because they're the biggest lobbyists for gun right protection. And what happened was they stayed back out of the news respectfully to the families so that they could at least get their bodies buried in the ground before the political war started. But did the news and the left? No. Did Obama? No.
They already started to politicize it right away.
They don't give a crap. Saul Alinsky, baby. Rules for radicals. How do you push an agenda? How do you take advantage of a crisis? You know? And so the NRA stood back, and I'm not pro-NRA or not NRA, whatever, you know what I mean? But I do understand his point because I've seen it. You know, I've read the articles. I've read the professional bloggers who follow articles around, and you can see this trend of people who are designed to start this, you know, this rhetoric and get it rolling and the hatred and all that crap. Yeah, it's pretty freaking evil to me, but whatever, it's marketing. But basically what he was saying is the number one most important point was not turning this into a political agenda. The second point he was talking about was the question is, why in the hell haven't we protected our children already? That he was one of the first proponents to get up and say, we need to, you know, we need to arm teachers and get guards in schools, and we're willing to help. And he got attacked for it, and that was back after the Columbine shootings. Well, here he is again saying the same thing after several more tragedies.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing? We protect everything in this country but our children. What are we doing? Or I guess the question should be asked, if you really want to be conspiratorial, is liberals, what is your agenda allowing this to continue, if you really want to get vicious about it? You know. But basically, he said that there is not a school in this nation. We have the resources. We have the people who would volunteer. We have trained, you know, trained people. I mean, we have so many ex-military and ex-police retired, you know, that are already trained, that have been spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars to get their skill level up. I can't imagine what the Army spent on my kid in 8 years. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for him to do what he does. You know, he's a very expensive tool, you know what I mean, as a combat soldier and as a leader. And the knowledge that he has, you know, I mean, guys like him would jump at an opportunity to help teach people, you know what I mean, to train people, to be part of that kind of system. And that's what this guy is saying, is we have the resources. It's America. He said not one student should walk back into school that doesn't have armed response teams in it in this country after the holidays. And that was the gauntlet. Because he said, if you really care, and all the politics aside, if you really care, that's the first move, is you take a step to do something positive to protect these children. Then we can move forward with discussions of what kind of safety programs, you know, should teachers be armed? Should it be armed guards? Should it be police? Like in my schools around here, we have a police car on duty at our schools, you know, and roving patrols. You know, so there's always something dynamic moving around that environment. It's part of a security system, if you understand that stuff. And then we can have that and work towards, you know, that responsible system. And they, what I found was amazing, are willing to put their resources, their 11,000 qualified teachers, all their database of knowledge and strategy into place to design systems across the country to help schools protect, you know, protect themselves through their communities, volunteers, the police, you know, making these systems in place, and they're willing to do it for free, which is a multi tens of millions of dollars of effort to protect our children. And I don't know how the left or the president is going to respond to that. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're going to just say, oh, it's, you know, the gun lobbyists, and they're just trying to, you know, keep the guns going, you know, things of that nature. And they're going to just try to tug on people's emotions, as liberals always try to do. And it's through my understanding, some Republicans sound like they're starting to cave, which doesn't really surprise me, you know, about the whole show. Oh, we've got to do something about this. Well, yes. We do have to do something about it, but definitely not in the direction that, you know, that Obama's trying to take it.
What, you mean take more guns away from legal citizens so that more criminals have more power over the rest of us? Is that what the liberal agenda is?
Yeah, that's the exact way of putting it. Taking the power, you know, giving more power away to the criminals, because it's taking, you know, it's taking it away from, you know, from the folks. You know, because how are they going to be able to protect themselves?
Here's the thing about it is bad guys have good guns, assault weapons, intel, and body armor. You know what I mean?
Body armor ain't hard to get. Yeah, they're not going to care about breaking laws. I mean, if they're going to go out to try to kill people, they're not going to, you know, worry about what kind of laws they're going to break in order to do so.
Well, and also let's just – and I want to reiterate this, because the whole assault weapon conversation is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. The first thing they're going after is a 30-round clip again. And I'm like going, give me a break. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the killings Okay, there's two points here that are important, because you have to do the research, which means you have to think, which means you have to put your emotions aside for a minute and do the legitimate research, FBI, you know, and whatever you want to do, and do the research. Number one, the top killing weapons in this country are not assault rifles. They are handguns, small, concealable. Small weapons, small caliber. You know, the news likes to talk about, oh, these high-powered, you know, like the lie of a .223 being a high-powered rifle. I mean, it's a varmint gun and small deer. You know what I mean? That is a tiny caliber. You know, 9mm, I call it a pop gun. You know, I know people get upset when I do that because they love their 9mm. I watched a video the other night of a guy point-blank shot himself with a 10mm, which is kind of like a 41 mag, for anybody who understands the power, you know, which is a one step lower than a 44, okay? Shot himself point blank into his body armor with a 10 mil. I've seen it done with 9 mils, and when he did it with a 10 mil, I'm going, wow, this new technology means it's harder to penetrate the body with a kill shot, you know? You know, bad guys can buy this stuff.
Right, yeah, and they get it, you know. I can never understand the quote-unquote logic. It's illogic, actually, and thinking that, you know, taking a gun, you know, well, we're taking guns off the streets. It's like, you're not taking guns off the streets. You know, you're just taking them out of law-abiding citizens' hands is what you're doing.
Amen. Well, you know, the other thing
I can never understand that.
We're kind of jumping.
I know where they're going with it. Go ahead, Chris. I just saying, I know what the anti-gun activists, you know, what they're doing with it. But you know, the law. I can't believe how people can actually hear that kind of ill logic and think that it's actually, you know, logical to think that way. I just doesn't make sense how people can be convinced.
Well,
with
that. Have you ever had proper handgun training with an automatic, semi-automatic?
Me personally, no, I have not.
Okay, when you go,
I've done shooting and training, but you know, not with any like being a professional like an officer or anything like that.
Well, whenever you buy a gun for self defense, you know, whether it be a 9mm, a 40 cal, which is the gun of choice, you know, the step up, the 10mm is a gun of choice of people who understand impact and you know, today's body armor, but the 10 mil is kind of punchy, kind of harder to handle. You know, we got a lot, you know, with the women in the forces, so they kind of are moving towards the 40 cal. But, you know, I'm an Alaskan. Smallest gun I ever carried was a 44 mag, you know, but that's Alaska. You know, I was around big game. But the thing is, let's say you buy yourself a 40 cal and it's an automatic or semi-automatic and you want to learn how to shoot. Well, there's multiple things. One is gun safety. The other thing is, can you get the damn gun out of your holster in a quick, effective point in time and make a kill shot? You know, and then you have one of the other training things. So you spend a lot of time drawing your gun because you got, you know, you're in a combat situation or a conflict and you got to be able to pull that gun effectively. Not do something stupid like shoot yourself in the foot. Get it out before somebody's killed you and make a proper aim and a proper fire. Now, another thing that you train with when you're training with semi-automatics because you have a magazine is dropping the existing mag when you're out of bullets and slapping in another mag. Well, if you have crap together, that's under a second. I've seen guys do it faster than that. And you go, well, they're professionals. Well, what the... If you train at something, you get better at it. So let's say I empty a magazine and I hit the release and I already am, you know, I hit the release as I'm reaching for my second mag and I slap it in, I can do it faster than I just explained it. So whether or not I have a 15-round clip or a 20-round, you know, extended clip or whatever, 30-round, it does not matter. You are not going to rush me in the time it takes for me to switch a mag. You know, you're not, you know, physically. And then if that's the case, then you carry two guns and extra clips. And this is the whole thing, the argument about the stupid 30-bullet magazine concept. Let's get them down to 10. So they carry three. They still have 30. And they usually carry more than that in combat, you know, that, you know.
Well, you mentioned, you mentioned something else. It is also, you know, if you mentioned people carrying two guns. Well, if they're like, you know, well, I only have a 10-clip, you know, 10-clip gun here. I just carry two, and now you're shooting, you know, you have one in each hand. I could see, you know, they're just shooting even more people, you know, because now they've got two guns in their hand to just start shooting off.
Well, it's a lot harder to shoot a good handgun with one gun, you know, effectively, but I understand.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's not something that most of these folks, I would think about when they just go into, you know, schools or restaurants or whatever they go and just start, you know, firing away at people. They just
a lot of them carry multiple guns. A lot of these, you know, I'm doing the research on this. A lot of these guys are carrying multiple guns. You know, it's backup. What if your gun jams? What if it, you know, I mean, you fire off 30, 40 rounds of the gun, it gets pretty dang hot. You know what I mean? So, you know, I carried in the woods in Alaska, I carried my 300 mag, minimum you should carry up there, and my 44 in a breakaway holster under my arm, you know, and the side was what you call a breakaway side holster. And because I didn't have time to reload, I wasn't carrying magazines. Mine was, you know, you had to press your dang bullets in or load your bullets into a clip. And there's a lot to be said for being able to pop a magazine and put another mag in and keep going.
Yeah.
But I always had that 44 as backup, you know.
Well, you mentioned about the anagram, the NSERP is what I call it, is NSSERP, the NSERP, or NSERP, National School Shield Emergency Response Program. NSERP. Anyway, I try to make it an easier way for you, but to say it instead of saying the whole long thing. I know you're doing some research. Yeah, okay.
No, go ahead.
Well, no, that's what I was going to say. I just bring it up because I know that was one of the things you know, we're talking about going over tonight and what we all have heard about that. I'm sure there's going to be more information on that as things come in, but
not a lot. I did a quick check. You know, real quick to see, you know, what the response was. And most of the response is just the negative attack against it, you know, as a concept. Oh, God, they want to arm teachers, you know, the stupid And this is so important. You got to think this is something where you have to stop and educate people and answer their misinformed question or impolitically correct, their stupid questions or statements. And that is, oh, my God, you want teachers, you know, armed? Well, there's a lot of them that already are, you know, licensed carry people that just can't have their gun in the school. There's a lot of citizens in this country that are trained and can carry a weapon already and qualify. And here's the important thing to think about. What do you think a police officer was before he was a police officer? Do you think he was born genetically for that job? He was a normal human being that went in and got trained so that he could do his job. What do you think we do with soldiers? We take children, right, and we throw them into basic training and the advanced training, and they are one.
Well, and you mentioned something.
And then we throw them into combat. They were citizens before that. Go ahead.
But, and you mentioned something that was key. You said a lot of these teachers are already trained, you know, to fire guns or, you know, have handguns or concealed carry. But
Not everybody in schools are liberals.
Right, and they can't bring them inside they can't bring them inside the school. I mean, they've already been trained in you know how to use them, but they have to leave them in their car or at home, you know, in order to because they're not allowed to bring the gun in the school. Now, one of the things we played last night is this clip by Suzanne Grania Hupp, and I was thinking perhaps for those who missed last night's show, of course, go check that out in the archive. I was going to play that 5-minute clip again for the audience who did not get the opportunity to hear it last night, and we could bring things that she set up as well, because I think you know, what you brought up there is a very good point, and this can illustrate it with what she said. It's about a five-minute clip, folks, so here you go.
Let me make sure that you understand I'm not here representing the NRA. I'm not even a member. Okay? Secondly, I'd like to say that in your opening statements, you commented that you commented specifically on my testimony, saying that basically it had nothing to do with this issue. And I had to chuckle because then I noticed you had Mr. Brady up here, who was hit not with an assault weapon but with a .22 caliber revolver. So getting beyond that, I didn't grow up in a house with guns. I don't hunt. I personally abhor hunting. But I was given a gun by a friend when I was 21 to carry in my purse for self-defense, and I was taught how to use it. A couple of years ago, my parents and I went to a cafeteria in Texas on a bright sunny day. We weren't in a dark alley where we weren't supposed to be. And as you all know the story, this madman drove his truck through the window. And he began shooting. Well, immediately, my father and I got down on the floor and put the table up in front of us. And this guy kept shooting. And you're thinking, what, you know, what could it be? Is it a robbery? That's the first thing that generally comes to mind. And he keeps shooting. It took me a good 45 seconds to realize that this man wasn't there to commit a robbery. He wasn't there for a hit. He was there to simply shoot as many people as he possibly could. Now, I'd like to make something clear. I hear all this talk about how many bullets can go in a clip. I've been there. I can tell you it doesn't matter. It takes 1 second to switch out a clip. You can have one bullet or 100 bullets. It doesn't matter, guys. I've been there. He goes, dump, dump. Just like that. That's not enough time to rush a man. I promise you. When I finally realized what was occurring, I thought, I got him. And I reached for my purse. He was maybe 12 feet away. You know, is it possible my gun could have jammed? Sure. Is it possible I could have missed? Sure. But I can tell you I've hit much smaller targets at much greater distances. But then I realized that a couple of months earlier I had made the stupidest decision of my life. I took my gun out of my purse and left it in my car. Because, as you well know, in the state of Texas, it's sometimes a felony offense to carry a gun in your purse. I can tell you that I'm not mad at the guy that did this. As he continued, it was obvious that he was a madman. My father, at that point, said, I've got to do something. I've got to do something. He's going to kill everybody in here. And he rushed the man. No way. The guy turned, shot him in the chest. He went down, was obviously mortally wounded. For whatever reason, that made the man change directions and go off to my left. Shortly thereafter, someone at the back of the restaurant broke out a window. When I saw what looked like an opportunity to escape, I turned around and I grabbed my mother by the shirt and I said, come on, come on, we've got to run, we've got to get out of here. And then my feet grew wings, and I was out the back window. As soon as I got out, I realized that my mother had not followed me out. And as I learned from the police officers, she had crawled over to where my father was and cradled him until the guy got back around her, put the gun to her head. She looked up at him, put her head down, and he pulled the trigger. My parents had just had their 47th wedding anniversary. She wasn't going anywhere. As I mentioned, I'm not really mad at the guy that did this. And I'm certainly not mad at the guns that did this. They didn't walk in there by themselves and pull their own triggers. The guy that did it was a lunatic. That's like being mad at a rabid dog. I'm mad at my legislators for legislating me out of the right to protect myself and my family. I would much rather be sitting in jail with a felony offense on my head and have my parents alive. As far as these so-called assault weapons, you say that they don't have any defense use. You tell that to the guy that I saw on a videotape of the LA riots, standing up on his rooftop, protecting his property and his life from an entire mob with one of these so-called assault weapons. Tell me that he didn't have a legitimate self-defense use. Just one final statement. I've been sitting here getting more and more fed up with all of this talk about these pieces pieces of machinery having no legitimate sporting purpose, no legitimate hunting purpose. People, that is not the point of the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is not about duck hunting. And I know I'm not going to make very many friends saying this, but it's about our rights, all of our rights, to be able to protect ourselves from all of you guys up there.
Robert?
I'm here. I just put my mic on mute while the video was on, because I wanted to make sure, or the audio was on, because I wanted to make sure there wasn't any background noise. But yes, I mean, she hit it right on. I mean, it's protected. It's one, of course, in the Constitution, talking about protecting from a government, but more direct is what we're talking about tonight, is to protect us about, from those folks who are going to be crashing through, you know, a window or entering a school, you know, and shooting a bunch of innocent people.
You know,
the Second Amendment is
about
protection.
Because the Second Amendment covers, you know, multiple things, and one is, you know, they talk about the well-trained or proper militia and all this kind of stuff, where people start to get into arguments over, well, we have police force now and we have National Guard and why do we need this? But it really gets into the right to protect yourself, number one, and number two, you know, extremely important in our founding fathers' eyes, who lived under tyranny and had a whole world history to go by, that if the citizenry isn't armed, bad people take over. I mean, that's the nature of government. And what's amazing is that people in this country think that the government is there to help them. You know, that the government is the good guy and the rest of the people in the country are the bad people. I mean, that has been an amazing mental programming in this country. I mean, you know, there, people actually voted Hitler into power and backed him. You know, people actually, joined and built the Russian Revolution and put in one of the greatest monsters in the history of the world. I mean, it is pretty amazing what a normal citizenry will do, you know, an uneducated, unarmed citizenry, how easy they are to take over, you know. I mean, that's one of the first things they go for, is they get your guns, because if you're not armed, then they can tell you what the law is going to be tomorrow, and there ain't a damn thing you could do about it, you know. It's just an amazing thing that people believe that the world is different than it was the last time we had monsters in power. I mean, does anybody trust Congress?
Yeah.
I mean, what is it, 12% approval ratio?
Yeah, I heard between 9 and 11 last time, yeah, but it could have inched up just a moment, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, I find it amazing.
Right.
But anyway,
right, well, yeah.
on go ahead.
Well, just to say, you know, and I'm sure you've heard, you know, at least part of, you know, the quote, you know, if you leave your protection up to someone else, you know, you'll have no protection at all.
Yeah, Benjamin Franklin. Those who give up a little bit of security or a little bit of freedom for security will have neither or neither, depending on what part of the country you're from.
Right.
This whole National School Shield, we found the short acronym. The National School Shield. Remember when we were trying to figure out, you know, what it's going to be? You know, education and training, you know, it's this whole long thing. But it's,
right,
it's,
National School Shield Emergency Response
they have
Program.
A little, yeah, they have a little, like a blue field emblem called the National School Shield. But the guy who's leading it up is Asa Hutchinson, who is Attorney General of Arkansas, U.S. Rep. He was the head of the DEA, and then he was the tied into the initial development of Homeland Security. So we got a guy that's heading up this program that knows his crap on a large scale. You know, he's an administrator, but he knows how to get things done. So their goal is to create a dynamic program across the country that, depending on the needs, because obviously in downtown Chicago, where they have, you know, gun bans, and so only criminals have guns. They have terrible crime. And schools in those environments, you know, there's a lot of schools in inner cities that you have to walk through metal detectors to go to school, you know, back
right.
to your person who said something stupid like, what does that show the children? It shows them they can live. How about that for an answer? But not to be too callous, but God, people are amazing sometimes. But their idea is to develop a program so that program can then be flexed depending on the needs of your school or your community. You know, where I live, we don't have, you know, shootings going on every day, every week, every month, whatever. You know, it's a whole different environment here. So obviously your system that you would develop for this community would be different than you would develop for downtown Chicago or L.A., you know, and that type of thing. And so they are putting all these resources. I don't have all the details of it because, you know, it was just announced today. But it is an amazing thing because, in my opinion, governments and states should have done this a long time ago. They should have got up and taken responsibilities because And it's the same thing I dealt with when I was trying to get schools to understand the importance of having an automated external defibrillator in the school. Was not just about saving children's lives, but it wasn't just children. The teachers, the higher risk category of sudden cardiac arrest, were the upper middle age, retirement age, baby boomers working in the schools. And what about the teachers and parents that came there? And a lot of schools, you know, rent facilities for after hours, you know, events, and most schools are an emergency response, part of the community emergency response system. So if you have an earthquake, terrorist attack, a war, you know, a catastrophe, that schools are part of that protection system for that type of crisis. So there's multiple reasons, you know, to have proper medical care inside of a school system. So that was, you know, covering all arguments. In my battle, you know, a school is more than just where you teach children, you know what I mean, read and write and arithmetic. And the same thing goes for this environment, you know, in this situation is, you know, for all standpoints, that is a community center. Why is it, you know, we have armed guard. I live in the capital city. We have armed guards and gun detectors or metal detectors in our capital, but why not in our schools? You know, it's that question, why not? And I'm sure the conspiracy theories would say because they want it to happen so that they can do what they're trying to do right now, and that's take our guns away. I'm not saying I believe that, but you can see how they could believe that.
Mm-hmm. True. Well, you've heard, you know, some of the, well, we've talked, you know, a little bit last night about some of those theories. But yeah, for the audience who are listening to this, for the audience who is not listening to this on, or is listening to this on the archives, or do not have the benefit of chat, Rex put a YouTube video on there, and the title, of course, I'm not going to go through the whole long name that you put in the link. The title is from Full Disclosure: Connecticut State Police Threatening to Arrest Independent Journalists? ? It's and we got 302 views, but it has 322 thumbs up. So that's interesting. People thumb it up without watching it. But anyway, I digress. So folks, check it out. Ben Swan, if you're a regular on the show, you know, we've had, you know, some of the things Ben Swan has done on here in the past. Definitely check that out on YouTube, www.youtube.com, and just under the, I guess, search engine they have there, a Full Disclosure: Connecticut State Police Threatening to Arrest Independent Journalists. And for folks, check that out at a later time. Go ahead, Chris.
I'm going to load while you're talking about.
Did you put a link in the chat?
Yeah, I'm going to put the NRA speech in there. I'm putting the bio on Asa Hutchinson so people can watch this for themselves.
Okay,
I'm going to put the transcript in there so people can pull it up and actually read it, because sometimes you get more when you read it and listen to it. you know, for dyslexic people like me, that helps.
Well, also what I'm going to do is on these links that you're putting in the chat, for those who are there, okay, that's the I could save this document and try to find a way of putting it on the website. But yes, but for these links, what I'll probably do tomorrow
is to PDF?
The PDF. Oh, I'll probably
I'll
try.
I'll put the Wikipedia link then, also.
There you go. And what I'll do is I will be updating the Bard's Logic Political Talk website tomorrow, and so I will be I'll put these links on there. For people to go
well,
to
I'm
on
very
the
excited.
Website.
You know, this to me, you know, Robert, it's kind of interesting because, you know, I like I said before, I don't get involved in these, you know, news of the day horror stories because it's,
right.
You know, I hate the propaganda, I hate the bull crap. You know, I'm one of those guys that actually knows there's like a lot more crime and terrible things going on around us every day. Why is this all of a sudden so important? You know, it's because they make it important. And I'm not saying it isn't important. It's a terrible tragedy. But, you know, there was 280 people died of legal drugs today, you know, given to them by their doctors. So, I mean, there's just things going on all the time. So I have a very balanced emotional state. When it comes to these kind of things, but I got involved in this one because I knew this was the one they were going to use to take away our guns or try to take away our guns. You know, I just knew it was. In my gut, I saw it. I went, yep, this one's coming. You know, it's children. It's the third one in a row or fourth one. You know, boom, 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 bam, here's this situation. It's children. It's during the holidays. They're going to play this thing 24/7. The misinformation on this is so terrible. The reporting on it, there isn't a straight story. We don't know if he had it, you know, did he have a 223 in the trunk and on his body? One guy says this, another guy says that. You know, there's so many mixed stories. You got the guy that was handcuffed on the ground by the school, and you got the guy that the news helicopter camera filmed running into the woods and the cops taking him out. You never heard anything about that. There's so much crap. Firstly, he had autism, and then they found out he's on psychotropic drugs for schizophrenia. You know, it's like, okay, what the hell is the truth? And when you have that much misinformation and bad reporting coming out that hot, they're pushing an agenda, and they don't give a crap what's true or not true because they have a goal, and that goal is the emotional response so they can move their agenda forward. And that's what caught my attention. That's why I started getting involved, started doing the research, because I felt like this is one that's worth paying attention to, doing the research on, doing shows on, you know what I mean, and tracking, because this is a political milestone. You know, this one's going to be big. And the thing of it is that it's a terrible thing. And could it have been prevented? I believe with proper programs put in place years ago, it could have been. I believe that I still have never understood why responsible adults who take care of children or other people who are responsible, you know, cannot be armed, trained, and ready to save lives in a violent country. I just have never understood that. You know, the left and the liberals and the communists think that, you know, we're going to make a better world. We're going to take away all violence. We're going to take away all risk. And you got to take away dodgeball. And you've got to make boys and girls the same and take away the aggression out of man. And it's like, are you kidding me? What planet are you from? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. Life is full of risk. Life is full of accidents. Life is full of bad people. You know, I started martial arts at a very young age, and part of it was things that happened in my life in under the care in schools where we had bullies and some pretty bad people, and I was tired of being afraid, you know, as a young kid, and I was scared, and I didn't know how to respond to it, and I got into martial arts. You know, and it didn't turn me into a killer. I didn't go around beating people up because I had the ability to you know, do things to people. You know what I mean? I trained my whole life. It tempered me. It made me more stable. It in a crisis, in violent situations, and I'm telling you, I've been in them. You know what I mean? I've been in bad places and bad things where I've had to protect myself and other people. I've been in places where if I wouldn't have been there, other people would have been hurt. And I don't get mad. I don't get upset. I don't freak out and go into a rage because I'm trained. I've spent my lifetime training myself. I've fired on charging bears because I was trained and I was prepared. Living to prepare yourself for crisis and adversity is a responsibility to me. But again, that's the world I've spent a big chunk of my life in, and helping other people learn those things, you know. And when you get around people, you know, like my son, I can't think of any safer person in the world to live in my house than an ex-military vet, you know, combat vet, who's trained and got his head on straight, you know, because I feel very safe. I live in a community, you know, we're right below Fort Lewis, and oh my God, we got military all around us. I live in a community that's full of retired military. I don't really worry about much in my neighborhood.
I remember when I was growing up, I had a lot of police officers who lived on the street where I grew up. So, you know, I know there's a lot of people saying, no one would want to, you know, rob anybody on this street because, you know, they had so many police officers who lived on it. And, you know, speaking of, you know, protection, things of that nature, and that definitely is, as I said earlier, we get more information on this, National School Shield Emergency Response Program. We'll talk more about it. But, you know, through what you were reading about that, what have you read? Because I know you said you're reading up on it. Because we talked about it briefly last night.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, because I know we briefly discussed it. I guess it was yesterday, perhaps last night. Or was it this morning? I don't know. The days kind of meld into each other.
No, this was just today.
Okay. Yeah, today. Well, they're talking about some of the things that we've discussed in, you know, putting, you know, officers, maybe not officers, so to speak, but, you know, people who are trained, you know, in firearms to be put in schools to, you know, protect the children. You know, what does it say on that?
He was saying that right now, immediately, that we should put in place resources to, you know, to get armed guards, police guards, whatever we can, back in the schools, when kids come get back out of vacation, that we've done something.
Right.
Now, that's not a total system, because if you look at the size of a school, it's just like when we were placing defibrillators in schools. In our programs, you've got to look at the size of the school, location, distances traveled. You know, what if the guy comes in the gymnasium and the armed guards at the front door, and that's a 5-minute walk. You know what I mean? There's a lot of dynamics there. If you're going to put a proper program together, another point that I've heard, I don't remember when, things are melding together. But,
I know what you mean.
You have one guard at the front of a building, you know, he can become a target. So it still lends itself to, you know, armed citizenry, you know, responsible people, and having multiple people throughout the school that are
teachers,
trained to work together.
Principal, maybe.
Yeah, that are trained to work together.
Maybe I could be part of principal training. If you're going to be a principal, you have to be trained in, you know, firearms. You're supposed to be the head of the school, you know, perhaps part of, if you're training, a responsibility of being head at school is be trained to know how to, you know, protect students.
I don't think...
Just throwing that idea out there. Go ahead, Chris. Well, looks like the call got dropped. We'll see what's happening there. Perhaps there's some technical difficulties. But, yeah, well, while we're waiting for Chris, I'd like to, you know, elaborate more on that idea is, you know, won't go ahead and elaborate on it. But welcome back, Chris, but your mic's back on. No, but I was just going to elaborate more on that idea. You know, you hear the principal's supposed to be like the head. Remember those movies, you know, the head of the school and protect it. But remember, wasn't there a couple movies? I know that's it's Hollywood. But wasn't there a couple movies that came out called The Principal or something like that, where the school – no, it was inner school problems. You know, there was violence actually within the school from the students.
you know, that I believe these movies were about, perhaps. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen them. But wasn't it when the, you know, the teacher, and he had carried around a big stick or something, you know, where he actually was physically protecting the students? Do you recall any of those movies?
Yeah, I don't remember them, but I know. When you talk about it, it's a light in the back of my mind, but I couldn't get any details on it.
Yeah, something I remember seeing years ago.
Yeah, we have disaster. We have fire, you know, practicing fire. You know, I remember when they first started putting fire extinguisher in school, that was a whole big issue. You know, emergency response systems for fire, emergency response systems for bomb scares now, you know, since 9/11. You know, remember the bomb scares where people call in. You know, you've got to have a program.
Right.
Here's the problem with when it comes to violence. You know, it's one thing. You know, to me, the brave person is the teacher who threw themselves in front of the gunman, you know, and died for it. And to me, that's a sad thing because, you know, like Ted Nugent said, I'd rather have a dead offender instead of a repeat offender. But, you know, it's sad that she couldn't have pulled out a 40 cal and put one in his eyeball and ended it right there instead of giving up her life. And that's sad. I mean, and yes, those are brave people that do that. But, you know, the goal is not to be somebody's memory in a plaque on a wall. The goal is to save lives, including your own.
You know?
And it's just amazing that we can, you know, praise what she did and not give these teachers a better opportunity to save more students' lives, including their own, you know, from a level-headed perspective. But back to what you were saying about, you know, any program, because there's going to be mass liability, you know, learning that function. First of all, a handgun is a lot harder to learn to shoot and handle than a, you know, carbine or even like the M4 that my son carried in the Army or these new Tavors. These Israeli weapons are just gorgeous. But, you know, these short carbines that you see these guys are when you watch the movie, the military movies or the, you know, the police are carrying them and things like that. They're short. They're urban, designed a little bit more for urban. But you cannot beat a rifle for aiming ability. Handguns are not easy to learn to shoot. And there's potential for, you know, collateral damage and things like that. So, and the other thing, too, is to understand the psychology of human beings. You have to find out who is capable of handling the gun, but also willing
just pull the trigger
role because it's a bit they've got to be willing to pull the trigger, otherwise they haven't helped anybody. And so in any training program, I would assume that I'm not an expert on this, but I would assume that that they would want to find out who was willing and able to be part of that system versus just throwing people into it and saying, you're it, here's a gun. That's not a good idea. You know, but everybody should be part of the system, you know, of care, just like they are when there's fire or there's a bomb threat or a terrorist attack. They've all been trained in that crap.
Yeah, maybe there should be some kind of training, you know, some kind of drill for that as well, because I believe I've seen something like another article that Kelly, you know, Mordecai put on Facebook. Let me see if I could check its page, but there has actually been another shooting, and he actually said, look, there's, you know, some kind of, and we could talk about this briefly, another shooting, you have to see where, I'm trying to see where this has happened, but he said there's going to be a lot more shootings until the UN Small Arms Treaty talks are decided.
Yeah, well, that's that, you're going down that conspiracy trail, or rabbit hole now.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I'll throw one out if you want to add one to the conspiracy rabbit hole. Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, DSH, government did a program up there right near this school a couple of years ago. So, get on your tin hat, you know. I don't know. You know, I don't put anything past government anywhere, but I'm not going to be the one that leads the charge on the theories. You know what I mean?
No, understood.
That's my disclaimer.
Understood. Right.
Well, as I said, it wouldn't surprise me.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to cough. I didn't want to blow the mic out.
No, it's okay. It's the season, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely going to keep my eye on this because I'm all about systems and programs and training, and I'm very interested to see them because I have done and been part of emergency medical training systems.
Right.
And also I've done, you know, wilderness trekking and things like that where you have to plan ahead and you have to train your teams and find out the strengths and weaknesses of your teams and things like that, you know, and that type of stuff. So I'm very interested in tracking this forward, both from a political standpoint and a practical standpoint, because the NRA wouldn't have launched this program, you know, it wouldn't have been something they figured out in a coffee shop last night as a response. This is something they've been thinking and talking about for a long time. You know, when you have a guy of Asa Hutchinson's, you know, background, you know, ahead of a key person in Homeland Security, you know, high-level guy like that, DEA, coming in and saying, I'm going to be the, you know, the lead on this program, and we're going to have, you know, intel, and we're going to have, you know, NRA is 11,000, you know, licensed trainers. You know, there's a lot of talent pool in that kind of environment, a lot of military, ex-police, ex-military. It'll be very interesting to see their program because – go ahead.
And yeah, this is a non-governmental program, so it could also be, once again, another illustration.
It'll work because it's non-governmental?
Well, yeah, that's one of the things you can say. Once again, it's going to show how more efficient and effective that it could be done when it's not done through the government.
I don't know anything the government does that works. Do you?
A few things here and there, but it's a very short list. I mean, especially if you're comparing it, you know, to things that the private sector can do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's fascinating. I don't know how they're going to fund it. You know,
that's true.
They obviously, I mean, this is going to be huge. If they're going to do a national program, and a lot of it is going to tie into they're doing one of the smartest things you can do, and that is to actually draw from the resources of people in communities and helping the communities develop their programs, and that is very similar. I understand that from a strategic situation because of our AED programs, because you know you're relying on teachers and coaches to be trained, you're relying on your local fire, Red Cross and those people to help train people. You know, you're creating a community-based program. It wasn't the equipment wasn't the difficult part because the manufacturers were there. All you had to do is raise funds, buy the AEDs, put them in place, and then you had to train people and you had to create. It had to be a total encompassing system that all people were part of. It wasn't just a bunch of paid people being there. And so when you're looking at a program, at least the way I see him talking about it, is using the resources of people in the communities that are willing to, you know, bring their experience to the table to help, you know, from volunteers to maybe obviously there'd be a few paid people involved. But you're doing what this country is great at. You know what I mean? It's pulling together all these – hold on, sorry.
It's okay. And you mentioned you mentioned volunteers. I'm sure there's a lot of folks out there who would do that. I mean, you I'm sure you've heard of volunteer firefighters, right?
Yeah. You know, well, so. in the gun world or the weapon world, there's a lot of people that already do this kind of stuff. You know, yeah, there's paid trainers. You know, that get paid to teach classes. But there's a lot of people, you know, when I was growing up, we weren't paying people to teach us how to learn proper firearm safety. It was part of, well, actually, if you go back far enough, they taught this stuff in schools, believe it or not. They had gun clubs, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I mean, there's going to be a time in history we look back and they're going to go, wow, they had merry-go-rounds. Wow, can you believe that? Because they've been outlawed. Dodgeball.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing to the human race?
Yeah.
I don't know how the hell people can get out their front door anymore, Robert.
Yeah, specifically here. I mean, they try to protect you from, you know, from everything, and, you know, you're not going to be able to learn if you're under total protection and try to keep folks in a bubble.
It's scary what they're trying to do to the human race, to me.
Well, by making them feel like they're the only one. Well, they want to take the guns. Part of it because I got so many things I want to get out at the same time. No, but one of the things that the government wants to do is make people believe that, hey, look, we're the only ones who can protect you, because that is one of the ways that they can get power over us, is by making it so, you know, they get people to believe that they're the only ones who can protect us instead of us protecting ourselves.
Cradle to grave, baby.
I mean, they want to do it economically. Now they want to do it through taking the guns away and
medically,
and all. Well, and also, and I think what the tactic that's starting to come out now that it, what I think would be the most effective is we're the only ones who can protect your children.
Well, cradle. I mean, look at,
you know.
I'll tell you. I don't know if you've ever
now
known anybody.
Now use their children against us.
Let me try to, if I can relate this in a proper dialogue. But I don't know if you've ever had anybody deal with child protection services.
Actually, I had a friend not that long ago. Well, I guess it's been over a year now. That had to deal, you know, something with them. He had a there was something that happened where one of his kids died, and they came in and did some investigation. Everything turned out okay. But so I'm familiar somewhat of it.
I'll tell you what, that's about as Gestapo as you can get, that organization. You know, you get them in your life for any reason whatsoever, even if your neighbor is mad at you because they don't like how you left your garbage can and they call them on you, getting them in and out of your life is a nightmare.
Not for mine personally. Just that I had a friend who had to deal with that.
Yeah, the government, the problem with government programs is they all may have started with a good idea, with good intent, but they have ultimate power and authority, and you can't fight them. So whether it's the EPA or Child Protection Services or, you know, whatever the case may be, I mean, we, you know, look at NDAA. Look at the things that people are putting up with today. There was a town that has had a high rate of crime, and so the police force is coming out fully engaged for riot control with their ARs or their M4s or whatever they're carrying in this town. And they're going to basically stop everybody on the street, ask them what they're doing. You're going to have to prove what you're doing. And they're doing this to all the citizens, and the citizens are all pissed off. It was an article I read today. And the main guy said, well, you know, we've got to a point where crime is out of control and everybody's bitching and complaining, so we're taking control. And so they're violating civil rights to do it. And the thing is what's scary in this day and age is we let them do it. That's what is mind-boggling to me. It's mind-boggling that we would even have a discussion about the need to protect our children. It's mind-boggling to me, growing up in the world I grew up in, that we would even be having a discussion that I should have the right to use deadly force to protect myself, my family, or my neighbor, or my fellow citizen against bad people, that bad people have more rights than good people. It up is down and left is right. This country is insane that we're even having these conversations, or that we should have to. It's insane to think that you have a few lone senators and representatives up there going, I will not vote for NDAA because it's burning the Bill of Rights, you know, with a match, with indefinite detention of American citizens, where the habeas corpus and the basic right to life, liberty, you know, and the pursuit of happiness, that cannot be violated without a basically a court order, you know, your peers saying you have done something wrong and now we can take your life, liberty, or property from you, but that is basically gone. And that there are human beings that we vote into power that are actually voting yay to that bill. And
right.
Somehow in their sick thinking, you know, who have taken an oath to protect the Constitution can actually think they're doing the right thing. For the good of the people, it's supposedly for protecting us.
Supposedly, right.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of freaky. and especially people who claim they're Republicans and vote for these a-holes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that think that this guy is a Tea Party candidate. Not if he voted for that. If he didn't fight it with everything he has. Whoever.
Right. You were proposing a list at some point on some of the Republicans who are voting for things such as that.
Yeah. Well, the NDAA is tricky because there's multiple layers of it, and it's gone through multiple processes. So, you know, and then the school shooting happened. So, yeah, you know, I'm probably, 15% done. I call it my naughty and nice list.
Because,
you know, while we're having the discussion, who votes on the BS legislation that comes out of, you know, what's that guy's name? Biden? You know, he's supposed to be the head of this task force to do all this research.
Oh, right, Joe Biden and the other bankers.
Yeah, so they can come along and tell us what they're going to outlaw in guns. You know, that now they want to get rid of semi-automatics. Good luck. That's about 90% of the handguns in this country, you know. Good luck. But anyway, they're going to pass some stupid legislation to make the people think like that, you know, think they actually did something to make them safer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Patriot Act. We thought it made us safer, and really what it did was light the Constitution on fire and give you an organization called the TSA that will, you know, violate your grandma for you. But...
Sorry. Yeah,
some days, I mean, when I talk about this stuff, Robert, some days I think I'm in an insane sci-fi movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like the Matrix, right?
America? This is what Venezuela we live in now? Anyway, but the idea, and everybody, you know, we are having a discussion about who's going to potentially run in 2016, and that's a great discussion. But everything that's going to happen in 2016 is going to be piggybacked or springboarded off of what happens in 2014. Because 2014,
right.
the whole House, was that 435 of them, are up for re-election.
Wow.
Okay. And then one-third of the Senate. So it's 33 and a third. I guess we vote for one-third of a senator. But a third... We vote for his left leg or something. But a third of the Senate is up for re-election. So if anything, and historically, the smallest percentage of people come out and vote during off years, you know, during the midterms. And
right.
It's about 30, anywhere from 36 to 38%. Well, the most important election in our history wasn't the one that just passed. I believe it's 2014. Because there's a whole slew of people. And I'm not talking about Democrats. Democrats are an obvious. You know, if you're a conservative Republican, constitutional libertarian, or liberty movement person, you know, that's an obvious. You want to run a conservative or a constitutionalist against that person because the Democrats are the socialist communists, and they're here to take away your guns, your life, your liberty, and control of raising your children for you from cradle to grave. They want to control your retirement, and they want to control when you're going to die. You know, that's called Obamacare, in case anybody doesn't get that subtlety.
Right.
Okay. So what's going to happen here in 2014 is there's a group of people in there that we're all pissed off at, from Boehner to Mitch McConnell to Cantor to that guy Ryan that everybody called a conservative. You know, all these people. These are all Bush-era people. Now, for anybody who isn't mind-warped into thinking that there wasn't bad things that occurred in the Bush era under the Republicans, that, you know, isn't that naive? But people who actually look at that era and realize that that was the foundation that gave us the world we're living in today, that Obama's abusing. Obama didn't create NDAA, okay? That was created with the Patriot Act. Obama didn't start the wars. Obama didn't take us to our first $4 trillion or five debt ceiling increases. That was Bush era, okay? And so for those who understand what the Republicans did to basically destroy everything that Reagan and Gingrich and that group tried to do with the Republicans, they're still in power. Yeah, there was a bunch of Tea Party people that got elected, but they've got a boot on their neck, and a bunch of them have been kicked off key positions. So you have to look at 2014 as an opportunity to clean out the last of the Bush-era politicians, because they're destroying our country. Yes, Obama and the left are, but they're doing what they promised they would do. This group is telling you lies. They said, elect me and I will be this, based on the Republican Party's platform. And then,
well, there it went. I'm sure he'll be calling back. Looks like dropped the line. Yeah, but also, you know, we're talking about the Republicans looking to cave into the legislation to strengthen gun control laws. So, you know, we're talking about the duopoly here. We're talking about the Republican and, there it is. Let me bring Chris back in. There you go, Chris. But we're talking about, there we go. But, you know, I think that you talk about the election 2014, and, you know, you talk about booting them all out. Well, another thing we've talked about is, you know, ending the duopoly, in which, you know, you just have a power based on the two-party system. Of course, we talk about the Democrat and Republicans. And so I think it'd be a good opportunity for your grassroots, you know, Liberty Party, such as the Constitution Party, to come in and really gain some ground. And those would be the folks who, you know, would cave under the pressure, as it looks like the Republicans, you know, are going to do, if there is going to be any more enhanced gun control laws.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple things, like, back to this idea of building this naughty and nice list is to me, anybody who was part of the Bush era automatically goes on the naughty list, but then I do the research, you know, because there might be some good guys in there, or good people,
right,
guys and gals. But
sure.
Really what we need to do is, if we want to change our, you know, there's too much time, money, energy, and effort put in the presidential election. That's one man or one person. Excuse my political incorrectness, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at Congress is, you know, the House is what, you know, passes bills and passes spending and, you know, votes on these things. And the Senate, you know, has their role, you know, and the president signs off on things. You know, the president may have agendas and public, you know, things, you know, the bully pulpit from the presidency. But, you know, all the stuff occurs in the House and the Senate. And so if you want to change our country, you've got to change those two bodies. You know, because
mm-hmm.
regardless who's in power, whether it's Obama, if Newt Gingrich is Speaker of the House, the last 2 years, Obama would have gotten nothing through.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean,
exactly.
Newt, you know, he's done this talk where he talks about the five powers of the House, you know,
mm-hmm.
and through appropriations and everything else, where you can totally control everything because you control the purse strings. Boehner and his group have done nothing to stop Obama, except, you know, Republicans and Fox like to bitch about the money Obama's spending.
Well, it's smoke and mirrors, right?
Who freaking gave it to him? You know, I mean, Newt shut down the government 2 times, said screw you. You know, and Clinton went, oh, he's serious. Okay, let's sit down and have real negotiations.
No, who can really take Boehner seriously, though? I mean, he's not serious, and nor can you take him serious. But
scary is they may vote the dog back in.
Yeah, I've seen an article that they're, and I kind of ignored it, but, you know, I've seen an article where they're talking about booting Boehner, and if that actually happens, you know, then I'll pay some attention to that, because, yeah, they could very well keep him. And it would be interesting to see if they did boot him, who they'd replace him with. But we do have someone.
Cantor.
Can't you think? I'm not saying that's outside the realm of possibility, but I'm going to look more into that.
I think they need to be one of those Tea Party guys.
Yeah, I don't know exactly who I would put in at this point. I'm pretty jaded on the Republican Party as a whole, except for just a very few select, and one of those, of course, is Newt Gingrich, but he's not really inside the party right now. Now, I think he'd be a great replacement for Rich Priebus, but that's not our topic for tonight. But we do have someone, as I said, who just chimed in a little bit ago and said, or wanted to chime in, and they put it in for a little bit ago. So I'm going to open up their mic. So 703, your mic is live. What's on your mind?
Hey, this is Rex.
Oh, hey, Rex. I didn't recognize the number here. It's been a little bit, but thank you very much for calling in. Good to hear you. And, of course, folks, you can hear Rex, I believe, on Sunday evenings from 10 until midnight on the Tex and Rex Show. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's interesting to note what you guys are talking about regarding the way the Republicans are acting and how, you know, the Bush era Republicans, as Chris put it, and it's absolutely true. And I wouldn't say it's limited to the Bush era. I think that these people have been around in the party since at least post-World War II, except for a few brief moments like Goldwater, Reagan, and, of course, 94 with Gingrich. But, I mean, look, they ousted Newt in 99, led by Boehner, little Ricky Santorum, and Lindsey Graham, and all the other rhinos. And then they went on a spending binge and foreign adventures that we didn't need to be involved in. Chris said, you know, they gave us the Patriot Act, and then the indefinite detention provision stuck in the NDAA now. That's just an extension of that. And I think it's interesting to note that they just voted on this thing, and it passed by a few less votes than it passed last time. But the nays were not as many as one would like. You know, of course, Rand Paul voted no. The only other Republicans were, I think, Barrasso, Enzi, and Grassley. Lee, I think, also. The rest that voted no were Democrats, which, I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, if we're the party of the Constitution, then why are we allowing this? So I think the paradigm has to shift, and we have to use their own interests against them. And remember something, that their chief interest is winning, okay? It's not governing. It's not doing the right thing. It's not adhering to the platform. It's simply winning. Well, when they realize that we don't support Boehner, they're going to ditch him. And you got to keep that pressure on. So tweet out, fire Boehner, call the office, call your representatives and tell them that, you know, you're not going to support this party at all if Boehner's speaker. And then, you know, watch that switcheroo. Look, they know we hate Romney, so what are they prepping us for in 2016? Jeb Bush.
Rubio.
Jeb Bush.
Marco Rubio. I mean, you know, so watch it. Just like Chris said, you know, you get rid of Boehner, what are you going to get? Cantor? Well, there's no difference there. Or Ryan or McCarthy? There's no difference there. You need somebody else. And I don't know who would be best suited, but that's kind of a decision for the conservative House members to make. I think it would be a stroke of irony to make Justin Amash the speaker. That would be,
that'd
be fantastic.
I like that guy.
But I think I think Michelle Bachmann's going to challenge Boehner, you know, and I mean she's got some issues. I kind of, you know, I lost a little of my enthusiasm for her when she lied about Newt in the primary debate. I thought that was complete crap,
right.
And it shows that she's kind of a politician. But for the most part, she's certainly better than Boehner. So I mean, I'd be all right with her. She's certainly got more balls than Boehner. This guy's he's a complete sissy. He's giving Obama everything he wants, and
right.
He's not using any of the tools Chris was just talking about in that Gingrich Productions or Human Events piece that Newt wrote, where he
right.
laid out all the tools. We did a whole show about it on Texan Rex. That the Speaker of the House, in reality, other than as, you know, Commander in Chief, obviously, but other than that, he's more powerful than the President. And this guy is just a complete sissy because he wants his, you know, armed security detail. He wants his, you know, bulletproof limousines. He wants his 3-day Washington, D.C. parties where he rubs elbows with the celebrities and all the other celebutards and the Democrats. So, you know, we don't elect these people to go to Washington, D.C. and party and rape and pillage. They're supposed to be servants. So this guy is supposed to be protecting the purse. And they're running trillion-dollar deficits. They're talking about balancing the budget. How the hell do you balance a budget if you're going in the hole $1,000 billion a year? You know, and people go, "How is that even possible?" Well, just look at what little Ben Bernanke's doing, right? He's picking up $45 billion. That's $1,000 million. $45 billion a month of Treasury securities, and he's buying another $40 billion. Of mortgage-backed securities. That's the only way that they're able to float this $1 trillion, and all it's doing is putting the whole country into hock, predominantly to the people who can buy hard assets with non-devalued dollars like the Chinese, who now have, thanks to the Federal Reserve, easier access to buy assets in the United States. It's frightening. It's got to stop.
Pretty scary.
Put the pressure on. Yeah.
Well, and it's pretty amazing that we've had this whole economic conversation for what, a good month and a half, 2 months. We've been on this pretty, and I know I've been on it, you know, nonstop. And, you know, educating on the Fed, educating on the fiat dollar, educated, you know, just we've been on this for a long time. But the main conversation right now, 24/7, is, you know, they're coming after our guns. While all this other terrible stuff is going on, we ain't going to have a country left in any shape or form of anything that you and I, you know, think of as this country. It's already in place. Look what people
are saying. We're the last bastion against the New World Order, or whatever way you want to put it, the one world government.
Yeah, well, I mean, what they do is they
would be ashamed.
Oh, yeah. Right? But they gin up the fear. Right, they gin up the fear to paralyze you. So right now they're ginning up the fear about, you know, they're going to take away your guns. Right? I mean, first of all, let's think about this. They can make them illegal, and they know that they're all registered. How many guns do we have floating around out here that are legal? 300 million?
Yeah, at
least. Think about just think about the awesome task it is of rounding up 300 million weapons. It's just not that easy. They don't have the manpower to do it. Plus, think about it. They start actually doing it, or maybe they get 10% of them. Right. So they take, you know, 30 million out of the hands of law-abiding citizens. What do you think the other 270 million owned weapons are going to be pointed at? I mean, it's a little crazy. So they're ginning up the fear about taking away our guns, while they're sneakily passing this
stealing our freedom.
Massive tax hike through the Obamacare Act and through this, you know, fiscal bunny slope. And actually, if you really think about it, this fiscal cliff thing, it's just all crap, because the fact is we're not going over a cliff. We're going up a mountain. We're going up a $85 billion a month mountain. It's like being on a roller coaster, right? You're sitting in the roller coaster, and you're going up, and it's going click, click, click. It's real slow, click,
yeah.
Click, click. And then you get to the top, and all of a sudden, whoosh, you just go racing down that roller coaster slope. Well, that's what's going to happen. And right now, Ben Bernanke's just click, 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 clicking us up this mountain. And the more he does it, the harder the fall is going to be. That's the real thing to worry about, not them taking away our guns. I mean, come on, that's preposterous. Not that they won't try, not that they won't pass laws and all this kind of garbage. You know, but the simple fact is, how are you going to round up that many guns? You can't even round up 12 million illegal aliens.
As Newt says, have Federal Express do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Send them a package, you know, right where they're at.
Well, actually, there's a city, I can't recall where it was, where what they did to get people who owed, I guess, back taxes or something, or back child support, that's what it was, for these guys, they sent them a letter saying, oh, come here and collect some kind of money or something like that. And when they went to go collect, they got arrested for paying their – they said, okay, you're actually here to go pay your child support. If you don't pay it, we're going to throw you in jail. I mean, that might be entrapment, so I don't know.
Well, if you're that dumb, you shouldn't own a firearm in the first place.
No kidding.
You know? but I'm saying that happened, and you're talking about the FedEx to try – what I'm talking about Newt Gingrich's idea about sending them a package to try to round them up, let FedEx do it. That's what they did to get these deadbeat dads and, you know, our moms too, I guess, that exists now too. But
well, and just to add a little bit of information to what you just said, Rex, about, you know, registered. The only gun that's registered is the one you buy new at a dealer.
Yep.
There are 100 million guns, hundreds of millions of guns out there that just pass hands, you know. And you know, for every single legal registered gun that a guy owns, he owns three or four that he's just bought from people. You know, they don't have control of this. All this whole thing is going to be is they're going to, just like the gun ban, you know, I researched that thoroughly. It was ridiculous what they listed as components that were considered, you know, dangerous. It was a joke, and nothing was done, and all the old guns were grandfathered in, you know, so they didn't do anything. It was just this illusion to make people think they did something to make us safer, and it didn't do crap. The only thing that's made us safer is the increase in private citizens able to carry guns. That's been the biggest increase of anything in this country.
It's like taking your cuticle clippers away and letting you think you're safe on an airplane.
And talk about safety, one thing I'd like to, you know, bring it back, because, you know, it looks like we only have about 10 minutes before I close out the show, you know, take the last 5 minutes. Yeah, I know. I mean, we could go, it's Friday night, we could go into extended Of course, it doesn't matter what night it is. We've gone into extended showtime if need be.
Every time.
But exactly. So, but what I'd like to do is bring it back to, you know, and Rex, since we have you on the line, you know, talk about, you know, protecting these children in the schools, you know, what methods, you know, to do that. Because as we've pointed out, you know, we've got people, you know, protecting celebrities and buildings and banks. And, you know, and I've even seen some, you know, armed people in grocery stores. What do you say about, you know, getting, you know, folks in these schools to protect it, as, you know, Chris has pointed out, is the most important, you know, they're not just assets, of course, for our children, but, you know, that's the future right there. So why not protect that, of course?
Well, I mean, of course, it makes sense. But, you know, the fact is that even if you put in one armed guy in a school, that's not necessarily going to prevent this kind of thing from happening. But, you know, there are measures you can take. I mean, I think, you know, having people armed at school isn't a bad idea. I mean, think about it, right? You trust these people to mold your kid's mind. You trust them to not molest your kids. You trust them to make sure if your kids get hurt that they provide them with medical care and nursing care and all this kind of stuff. And they probably on most weeks spend more time at school than they do at home. So if you trust them to that degree, you're not going to trust them to, you know, learn how to use a firearm to defend your children. I mean, that's a little nuts. But also the way that they build the schools and the way they lock them up, these things can all be, you know, researched and done. You can build better classrooms. You can put down, you know, certain procedures. I mean, think about it, right? They have fire drills, like every quarter in the school to make sure that, you know, nobody, you know, gets left behind or gets screwed up and burns down. And I think in the last, you know, 50 years, there hasn't been a single death from fire in a public school. So if we're drilling to keep them safe from fire, why wouldn't we do any drills to keep them safe from, you know, armed psychos? I mean, you know, back in the height of the Cold War, they used to do duck and cover drills, as if, you know, hiding underneath a wooden desk is going to protect you from a nuclear bomb. But they still did the drills. So why can't you do drills for lockdowns when there's, you know, a threat? I mean, it just makes sense. So I think we could do these things. But that's – go ahead.
We already do – we already have – you know, we have fire. We have earthquake, natural disaster, and terrorist responses. So these teachers are already partially trained, you know, to move those kids, to protect them, to lock down, to get them out of the school, whatever the case may be. You know, so there's already a modicum of emergency response training in a school. You know, the part about putting a gun in somebody's hands is definitely advanced training, because it's got to be the right person. They've got to be able to act in, you know, in terms of an emergency. They've got to be able to have the will to pull that trigger.
It's a learned skill. And if you're going to be a teacher who's going to be in charge of 30 or 60 students, I mean, that's probably one of the, you know, first skills you should have, other than obviously the educational capacity.
Right.
I mean, you're in charge of people's children, that you better be able to protect them and defend them.
Exactly. That's what I was saying earlier about teachers. That's what I was saying earlier about, you know, teachers being armed, you know, because I think or a principal, maybe that being one of the under the job description, so to speak, for, you know, to be a principal. So, hey, if you're going to be a principal of the school, you have to be, you know, get firearm training in order to, you know, to protect the students that is under your charge. But I will. I do have a couple more folks, so there's a possibility we will go into extended period tonight, extended session. We have two folks on. 718, I see you're on. If you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial. But I do see someone else that we are all know well, and that is Gunny or Mr. Stufflebeam. And I will open up your mic. Thank you very much for coming in. Good.
About time.
Randy, would you mind if I made one quick point before we let you unleash?
Hey, not at all. In fact, I don't have a whole lot to add to what you all have done. We had a great show this morning, two great shows, actually. So go ahead.
Okay, real quick, I just wanted to say one thing I will caution when we start talking about arming teachers and principals and making these requirements. The one thing I will caution, you do not let the federal government make one single decision. This is up to each community, up to each county, and up to each state. And if that's the way that the community there wants to handle it, great. And then for those communities that are deathly afraid of guns because they're dangerous and they kill people and they don't want to do it, when their kids start dying, they'll wise up. But, you know, I don't think that it should be federally mandated. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Gunny.
No,
that's a good point. I agree with that. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, you know, and the crux, and I'm sure you guys have said this probably ad nauseum, you know, is the fact that training, you know, absolutely, and then more training, you know, is crucial. In fact, you know, the slogan in the Marine Corps is, the more you train in peacetime, the less you bleed in wartime. And, you know, so it's absolutely crucial that this becomes a part of everyday, you know, you were just mentioning fire drills. Well, there's tornado drills. There's earthquake drills. Well, why not have a crazy gunman drill, you know? I mean, you know, I was thinking about this earlier when we were having our show. In fact, we may on my next show talk about this. But, you know, rather than throw your body to protect your children, why not pick up a freaking chair and throw it at the guy, you know? I mean, there's you look around the room and there's so many different opportunities for weapons that you could get at your hands rather than using your body. Mm-hmm. You know, me and Chris have mentioned this earlier. You know, we in the Marine Corps are not taught to die for our country. We're taught to make that other SOB die for his, you know. I'm not going to just throw my body out there, man. I'm going to find something. And I'm going to, you know, a bowl, a cup. You know, I'm going to throw it at him and try to knock him out, knock his weapon out, whatever. You know, I've got many other resources besides using my body as the first response.
Mm-hmm. And what people don't keep in mind is that these guys aren't trained. These are psychos who are amateurs. They're not trained. And the simple fact is even a teacher who is deficient in training or not really good under pressure, the mere fact that they're shooting back will disorient the guy and force him to reassess his actions.
Well,
so,
look at what happened in that mall. Look at the guy didn't even make a shot. He just pointed his weapon, and the guy decided, and killed himself.
It's over, done, yeah.
Coward. Well, and the other thing, too, the psyche of these mass murderers is most of them are cowards, and they end up committing suicide, so they're double cowards. You know, that's the worst cowardice in human nature, you know, is somebody who's willing to, you know, take their own life instead of face life.
You know,
so, it doesn't take much to deal with a coward. And cowards are usually bullies, too.
Mm-hmm. And bullies can't stand up to being stood up to.
That's right. Robert?
Well, two things. One is, C718, if you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your phone dial, and we'll have you into the conversation. And I do see that there's only 8 minutes of the live show left. So, of course, we can go into extended time. After that is over. So I guess since it's looking that way, in about 3 minutes, I'd like to close out the live portion. And then if we will, we can go over to extended. So I guess we'll bring it back to you, Chris or Rex, and then Gunny, if you'd like. So go ahead.
Well, I think one of the things that we need to make sure that we bring in this conversation, Randy and I were talking live on the phone today about this, is the whole liability issue. Because one of the greatest fears of, even as a citizen, when they see an accident in this day and age, the fear of being sued, the fear, you know, of involving themselves in tragedies that are going on around us. You know, we just walk away, we turn our back because, you know, of that fear. So if this is an increased role in our communities, which I pray to God it is, that the NRA, I love what they're doing. I think it was one of the smartest political moves they could have done. They said, we are essentially going to create a program and work with communities and work with volunteers and put all of our resources on the line and our 11,000 trainers, and we're going to help people protect our children, because obviously the government can't do crap or is unwilling to do crap. So the other point is the liability, and it was the same thing I faced with trying to get AEDs in schools, defibrillators. You know, was a liability, and they passed new laws, Good Samaritan laws, but they really had to shore them up. And if I'm going to be armed and put myself at risk beyond my own family, on my own property, I want to make sure I don't go to prison trying to save somebody's life. So anyway, that should be brought into the conversation as we go.
Well, yeah, of course they have to take those precautions. But, I mean, look, the simple fact is if you're actually faced with a situation where it's either, hey, I might go to jail or this kid might die, then go to jail, okay? I mean, save the kid's life. That's worth far more than you know, having to, and let's face it, you don't go to jail, okay? You go to trial, Okay, this indefinite detention stuff, you know, I mean, it's got to stop. But the simple fact is, if you're, you know, arrested for something, you're going to have a trial. I mean, the simple fact is, as soon as you get a concealed carry permit, the first thing, one of the first things that they'll tell you is, if you are ever in a situation, and hopefully you won't be, if you're ever in a situation where you have to use your weapon, then as soon as the threat is neutralized, you are going to relinquish your weapon and let the police arrest you. Okay, because that's what they're going to do. Because when the cop shows up and he sees someone with a gun, he doesn't know who's the assailant and who's the perpetrator. So they're just going to, you know, detain everybody. And then, you know, if it doesn't work out that they understand that, you know, you're the good guy, they're going to take you to jail, and then you're going to get a trial. And the fact is, that's why we have a jury system. So, you know, sometimes you got to take that risk. But there are ways where you can legally exempt people. And I think one of the biggest concerns everybody has is, well, if these people are shooting back, they might hit one of the kids. Okay, well, I got to say something. If a child gets injured or, you know, God forbid, killed by friendly fire, that's better than a mass slaughter. You know, I mean, that's just part of the risk. And it happens in military situations all the time where some people die from friendly fire. But what are you supposed to do? Not shoot back at the enemy? So, you know, maybe instead of 20 dead children, we would have had 3 dead children. One of them was killed by friendly fire. That's a tragedy. But 17 kids would still be alive. So, you know, you got to weigh the risks. And people don't do a cost-benefit analysis of this stuff. They just get knee-jerk emotional reactions because people are afraid of guns. Well, if you're afraid of guns, then why do you want the government to have all of them?
You know, that's certainly the case. I mean, you know, every time you get into your vehicle and you put your kids in the back seat, you're taking a huge risk that the other person sees you, doesn't come around the corner and bash into you and kill you and your kids. So, I mean, you know, the fact is, life is risk. You take a risk. You put your children at risk all the time. So
on a yellow school bus.
Exactly.
If you put them on the bus, I think.
So, you know, the bottom line is, you know, we got to take a look at reality, get beyond this emotional crap that they're trying to use. And I think actually, as I'm looking at this thing, I've got a kind of a little bit of a feeling that it's going to all backfire on them in a very big way.
I think so, too. I mean, look, the simple fact is, last year more kids died on a school bus than were shot at school. Whereas, you know, assess the risk. Go ahead.
Real quick, Rich, I see that there's only about 3 minutes left. So, of course, I'd like to close out the live portion by thanking everyone for coming to the show. Thank you for the calls, gentlemen. And for those listening on the archive, thank you as well. And if we do not have another session here on Bard's Logic Political Talk before Christmas, I'd like to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas. And we will see you at some time before the new year. And also, for any last-minute gift ideas, there is a great organization called the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, which for only $50 a year, you could sponsor a baby elephant that was killed by poachers. And the way you could get there is by going to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, and that's www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, and go to the Get Involved page, and you will see, among other clips, a red button that says Save an Elephant. Just click that, and that will take you to the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, in which you can go ahead and sponsor one of the baby elephants. As I said, it's a great Christmas gift for one of your loved ones. I believe you get a photo and also some updates and things of that nature. And also check out the rest of the website, because they do some really great conservation efforts and educational efforts as well.
You know how they can make money?
How's that?
This is what we used to do in Alaska. They could gold plate the baby elephant turds and sell them. We used to gold plate moose turds and sell them to the tourists.
Well, that's interesting. The next time I talk to the folks from there, I'll bring that up. Or actually, maybe I'll bring that up in the interview that I'm going to have in the beginning of next year with Julia Newman, who for the folks who have just come on here, she's actually did an interview with us and the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, some folks from there. But she'll be on, and I'm sure you've heard her music here on this show. But also...
if you're familiar with the TV show Bones, or if you've seen the, and of course she's got other things that she's done, but also if you've listened, or I'm sorry, seen the movie I Am Legend, she composed the music for that movie and the TV show, at least the TV show since the 2008 episodes. But I do see there is another caller in the line, and so if you'd like to chime in, just please press one on your phone dial, or if you're just calling in to listen to the recorded session, which is going to begin in approximately 30 seconds, that is fine as well. So what we'll do is we'll bring it back to you, Rex, since I unfortunately had to interrupt you there. So take care, everyone. The live portion is about to end, so take care, and once again, Merry Christmas. Go ahead, Rex.
Oh, I don't think you interrupted me. I think I finished my point, but I just think that people need to not be emotional about these things and kind of assess them rationally. And every local community should make up their own mind. But you know, the fact is, if you're not willing to protect your children, whether it's at school, in their mother's womb, on the school bus, or what have you, then you know you're not looking forward to tomorrow. You've already given up. And I think that's a terrible mistake. Now, are you going to be able to protect them from everything? No. I mean, if you over shelter your children, they're never going to grow up, and that's possibly an even bigger crime. And as Randy said, life is risk. So just manage the risk. If you're willing to put your kids on a yellow school bus, separated from the oncoming car by only two painted yellow lines on the road, but you're afraid that allegedly a intelligent educated person who's molding your kid's mind is going to mishandle a weapon, you really haven't thought this through. That's it.
Amen, brother. Amen, brother. You know that.
Well, there's a whole thing. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, when you looked at the interview of Larry Pratt, that moron, what's his name, Piers Morgan. You know, are you going to tell me that you want a teacher who could, drop a weapon in front of all those kids and the kids are going to pick it up and start shooting each other? I'm like, really? That's your argument? You know, there's no basis in reality in that. What so freaking ever?
Are these the same kids shooting heroin up in the bathroom? I mean, they have easier access to heroin. You're worried that a school teacher who's allegedly a responsible individual is going to screw up when they're defending them against a madman. But yet these kids get drugs. They walk across the street to McDonald's, maybe get hit by a car. I mean, come on, it's ridiculous.
They have sex in the schools.
Yeah. So I mean, come on. Where's the?
Yeah.
It's okay if they get AIDS, but we can't have them accidentally shot by a teacher when shooting a madman who's killing 20 kids. I mean, it's just dumb.
Well, yeah, but here's the other thing. You know, take a look at the size of these kids in this school. We're talking about kids going to accidentally get shot. I mean, look, the kids barely come up to the waistline of most of these teachers, right? And so all you got to do is pretty much aim anywhere above the chest, and you're never going to hit a kid. You know, so the argument is insanity to begin with.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the whole argument, it's a liberal agenda, and it is all insanity, and that's why we're having the discussion, because we're sane, and people need to hear this conversation.
Say something here real quick, Chris, because I was thinking about this earlier. In fact, somebody had actually mentioned this in response to my show this morning, because the guy says, you know what, Randy? Quite frankly, probably the people that you were talking to, you're probably preaching to the choir. And that's probably true, probably here as well. You know, I mean, most of the people that are listening to your show, Robert, and, to you, Rex, and, all the rest of us, mostly we are probably speaking to the choir. And so I got to thinking about this, and one of the things we really need to do is make sure that we are giving those people who are listening to us the ammunition that they need to fire off at all of their liberal buddies and all the other liberals that are listening to them and they interface with. We've got to give them ammunition to fire.
Well, that's Randy.
Inflammatory words.
My whole group is that's what the whole purpose of my Facebook group is.
And what
you
Facebook
know, that's an
was that, Chris?
That's an educational environment. What was that, Robert?
I said, and what Facebook group is that?
Coalition of Freedom, sorry.
There you go. No, just trying to get a little promo to your group, man.
But, I mean, that's what I've done. You know, I like it's, and you guys have heard me say this before, I don't get involved in news of the day stuff like this. I don't get involved in these, you know, the media-driven tragedies because there's tragedies every day. There's 280 people died of media malpractice today. Today. You know, there's people died in real violent crimes in cities. You know, this is the media has made this big. The only reason I've taken this one on is because I knew this is the one they were going to run with. You know, it was just all the components were there.
Yeah.
And so I got in the middle of it, you know, and said, okay, I'm going to fire back. I'm going to do the research. I'm going to educate. I'm going to write blogs, articles, comments, you know, responses, you know, to educate people. You know, to go out and battle this and take it out into their communities with them. But I believe one thing you did say is preaching to the choir, and I got to challenge that a little bit because whereas most people are Second Amendment, you know, conservatives, constitutionalists, believe in our right to bear arms, this is still a sensitive subject, and a lot of people need, even people who believe in the right to bear arms, need this conversation because it gets weird when it gets to our schools.
Well, you're
you
absolutely
know what I mean?
Right. And but, you know, what I find here, and this is kind of some of the point that I was making, is giving people the ammunition to educate them so that they fully understand. Because, you know, I've gone around the nation, actually, speaking to Tea Parties. And, you know, everywhere that I go, I always challenge them about what they know about the Constitution.
Yeah.
And one of the questions that I ask, and I point out specifically to those who served, veterans, and I ask them this question: who, according to the Constitution, is responsible for the appointment of officers? And almost almost without exception, they all, well, Congress or the president, right?
Wrong.
Well, let's take a look at the Constitution and see what it says. So, you know, we've got to make sure that these people, well-meaning people who say I'm going to uphold the Constitution, actually knows what's in it and the principles and the basis behind it. And so that's certainly, you know, a strong aspect of what
right.
we're doing in this system of providing them the ammunition, because if they don't know, they can't even form the argument correctly. They're just like, well, you must be right. And so they assume the argument out of the gate.
I think that also the thing that I've taken a tact on is the concept, the difference between right and responsibility.
You sound like Russell Kirk.
In other words, a lot of people go, this is my right, I have the right to this, I have the right to that, I have the right to this. But the responsibility is, are you acting upon it? Are you increasing that right in your community? And I've actually made the comment, you know, a few times through this process is, you know, if this is your belief, if you believe in the Second Amendment, then you need to go out there and buy a gun and get trained and get your carry permit and become part of the solution. Because as you become part of the solution, you will influence people around you. Because once you, you know, if you do something and you enjoy it, and you take away the uncomfortability of it, you will talk about it, and you will influence other people. So, you know, it's not that expensive to become a legal gun owner, you know, and to move forward, to be part of the solution, not just the dialogue.
And go to your school board meeting and express these ideas, because they've probably never considered them. And then, you know, as far as preaching to the choir goes, well, two things. One, I'm fairly confident that at least on the Tex and Rex show, we get a lot of people who think differently that are just kind of curious as to what we might say next. But also, think about it this way, right? Most of us go to church every Sunday and you get a homily or a sermon on stuff that you should already know. And you know, there's a lot to be said about confirming the brethren. So just because someone happens to agree with you doesn't mean that they can articulate the point, doesn't mean that they can argue the point, and doesn't mean that they have totally internalized it, even though rationally they agree with you. So oftentimes, you know, repetition helps in solidifying these things. And here's a simple fact. You know, you mentioned, Randy, you know, you're asking veterans who should know the order of command according to the supreme law of the land that don't know it, well,
exactly.
Maybe it's because we don't actually read the Constitution. And, you know, maybe it's not just a cursory reading. Maybe it's not just a one-time reading. Maybe it's not even an annual reading. Maybe you need to read it more often. So, you know, I don't think there's any harm but only benefit from saying this, but I agree with you 100%. If all we do is talk to each other, then nothing happens, which means that, one, you need to be part of the solution, like Chris said. You need to be well-trained. And, in fact, if we really read the Constitution, every able-bodied male above the age of 18, and actually training even prior to age 18, but should be a Minuteman. I mean, that's kind of the whole point of the Second Amendment and the well-regulated militia. So it's not really an option. You know, people go, oh, but conscription is slavery. Well, you can only conscript people if you have a federal army. But a state militia, well, that's not conscription. That's your duty. That's your duty as a citizen to be prepared to defend your family, your neighborhood, your community, your state from any aggressor, whether that aggressor be, you know, a foreign invasion, a crazy gunman, or possibly your own federal government. So, you know, I think that we've been too affluent and too soft and too effeminate, and I think it's about time we man up.
I agree with that last one. I agree with that 100%. I think
absolutely.
That it even goes beyond, you know, the right to bear arms or the responsibility to bear arms, but it also goes to simple things like first aid and CPR AED training. You know, because when the American Red Cross,
got screwed up. Well, go ahead, Chris.
Well,
is people suing people. But, well, you know, what you mentioned CPR. You know, I think one of the things that really hindered people for that is, I mean, if someone, you know, you try to give someone CPR and the person dies, to my understanding, people have been known to getting sued
what
I mean.
Well, Shakespeare had a solution to that problem. Shakespeare, Shakespeare spelled out the solution to that problem. First, kill all the lawyers. You know, considering this is Bard's logic, I figured I would quote the Bard.
Well, there you go. There you go. It's great.
Hey, I would like to step back to a particular topic, though, that you mentioned kind of briefly. Because this is an aspect of that all needs to be talked about here that is an interesting aspect of it. Because there was somebody, who was it? I'm not sure where I remember hearing this, but somebody made, or maybe I read it, somebody made the comment that, look, you've got your weapons locked up in a cabinet. So you're going to tell me having a weapon is a good thing that you can't even get access to. And I got to thinking about that. I'm like, you know what? That really is a pretty good point to be made. Look, are we really serious about the ability to protect ourselves? Now, certainly, you know, I was thinking about this in terms, I don't have to lock my weapons up in my house. Why? Because my kids are well-trained and well-versed in what it means to hold these weapons and the damage it can do. They can see it laying on the counter, and they know, hey, I'm not going to pick this weapon up because I could probably kill somebody. See, it goes back to the idea, and you mentioned it, Chris, responsibility. If we're responsible to train everybody about this stuff. We can't just leave it to the willy-nilly and hope that, you know, somehow they've gained the knowledge by osmosis or something. We've got to train them. We've got to be responsible for it so that if somebody invades my house, you're right. I'm not going to be able to open my locker, put the key in, and make sure I can get to my weapons to take out the intruder. No, I've got the gun in my drawer next to my bed. Well, I'm going to change that now that I've told everybody. I'll have it out of my phone now. But you get the point here. You know, there's a level of insanity. In fact, Larry Pratt, even on the Piers Morgan, says, well, you know, my weapons are responsibly locked up. And I'm like, look, what good are they? Now, I can see you having the majority of your weapons, you know, hunting weapons and stuff. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, the idea that I've got to lock every single weapon up in my house and not be able to protect myself, I mean, it's stupid.
Well, Randy, I was going to – and I've talked about this and actually written some short articles or blogs or whatever on this subject. You know, you have you know, for a typical gun owner, they have multiple weapons. Okay, there is your protection weapon, and that gun needs to be accessible. And then your other weapons that you train with, hunt with, you know, and for alternate uses, they need to be locked and stored properly. Because there's another issue, you know, a couple of these shootings have come from stolen guns. And that becomes part of the dialogue with the left, is that, you know, they're getting their hands on guns illegally.
But hold on. Who are they stolen from? They're not stolen from the local Walmart. They're not stolen from their neighbor across the street. They're stolen from family, from their from their stepfathers and stuff like that. You know, they always say it's stolen. Well, you know what? You let that person into your house and you don't know what they're doing, then you've got an issue of responsibility here. So, but yeah, you're right. You know, if you're going to have people that you can't trust, yeah, you better have that stuff locked up. But, you know, when people say the weapon was stolen, well, it was stolen from their nephew or their uncle or whatever.
No, the guy that did this mall shooting broke into a friend's house and stole his gun. So you can't. And I understand that ultimate point of responsibility, but the fact is that will become a point of dialogue with the left, and so it has to be addressed. I, you know, with my son, you know, going hog wild on weapons, you know, I told him, I go, you got a slew of things here, and there's a bunch of stuff needs to be put away and locked up, you know, very securely, because you're not carrying it on your body as a protection every day. You know, you've got to take responsibility for the rest of those five or six guns that you have, because you ain't carrying all five or six of them, and they become a liability to other people. And if somebody does, you know, not in our house, they're going to break in, but and that kind of thing. So there has to, that discussion has to be had. There's a lot of people, you know, that buy these, when I was growing up, because we lived in a world where you didn't have home invasions like you do today, and we had beautiful gun cases. Well, that's stupid in today's world. You need to lock your shit up. You know,
yep.
It needs to be more secure. Home invasions
are front door,
big,
don't you?
And you don't, yeah, well, front doors you can go through pretty fast. But you know what I mean. But the idea is that that has to be part of the dialogue. Proper securement and things like that. We can't be flippant about that, because people do get their guns stolen.
Well, here's the other thing, though. It's not like, you know, these are, you know, assault teams or, you know, special forces going into school from multiple points of entry and just, you know, taking out, you know, multiple rooms at the same time. All right, it's one guy, right? How did Lanza get in the school, as far as we know?
He broke in the glass.
From where?
Through the window.
Right. Okay, so one point of entry, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so generally speaking, these lone psychos come in through one point of entry. So what you need to do is design the buildings in a way using the proper doors, the proper window security, the proper motion detectors, alarms, or what have you, so that you can detect that one point of entry. And then you can always make it so that the kids can exit, but no one can enter. And then if you've got one point of entry, you can always secure that. And the fact is that if you make an announcement once there's a breach, then the teachers who have been properly trained will go into lockdown mode. They'll grab their tasers. They'll grab their handguns or whatever other firearm they have or what have you, whatever the procedure is. And are you going to be able to eliminate casualties? No, but you're certainly going to minimize them and neutralize the threat. So it really just – and the fact is, it's not like we don't have access to this information. I mean, you've got multiple security companies. You've got military people. You've got plenty of people who can go into a building and assess it, and you can design them and build them and secure them in ways to prevent this from happening. You know, this is just the same craft that we had in 82 with the Marines, right? We got them there at the Beirut International Airport, and there were people – I know for a fact that Dick Marchenko, who's, you know, head of SEAL Team 6, was basically saying, look, you guys are sitting ducks. You need to have more works and all this other kind of stuff in security. And they didn't do it, and all of a sudden you got Hezbollah coming in there and blowing up, and we lost 182, jarheads. And that's just a tragedy that should have never happened, because we knew that it was a threat beforehand, and you could have structured it in a way that wouldn't happen. So it's the same thing here. You can build these things so that you make it difficult, you know, for any kind of egress or regress by the threat, and you narrow down his scope, and then you can neutralize him that much faster.
Yep. Well, Israel is very good at protecting its children. They had a breach in a school back in hold on, let me get to my chart that I've been building here. Back in 74. So we're talking about a long time ago, and they lost 26 deaths, 60 injured, and it was terrorists. And so, you know, Israel fixed the problem, and now you don't hear about it anymore. And that's the frustrating part about this, is that this is all solvable. You know, we have the best military, the best police, the best emergency systems, security systems in the world, and we're not protecting our children. That's the insanity of this conversation.
Right, look at all the money that, you know, is going into the school systems as well. You know, I mean, they're constantly talking about, you know, raising taxes for schools and things of that nature.
Oh,
you know,
geez.
You know, so
it's ridiculous.
There's a lot of waste there that they could put towards, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot
these
of
modifications.
Yeah,
you don't have to buy the new version
there.
Of each textbook every year. Save that money and use it for security. I mean, you know, what does calculus change from year to year? I mean, give me a break. You know, how about you just, you know, teach the kids to take care of the old books? You can use them for 5 or 6 or 7 years, and you save all that money because those books are friggin' expensive, and then you can apply that money to security. I mean, solving these problems is not hard. It just requires a will to do it, but we don't like to solve problems. See, people like problems. Even people like the NRA, they like problems with guns because it gets them an interesting fear point with which to raise their PAC money. You know, so you got to watch it because a lot of these people, same like with, for instance, the pro-life movement. Why have we not solved the problem in nearly 40 years now? Because there are those in the pro-life movement who raise money for the cause of pro-life that don't actually want to solve it because if it goes away, they lose their clientele. You know, if we're talking about real solutions, let's get real and let's solve problems and let's quit pussyfooting around all these special interests and all this excess money and all this advocacy, and let's actually get things done. And this is precisely why they got rid of Newt Gingrich, because he was getting solutions in Congress, and they didn't like that. Guys like Boehner and Cantor and all these guys, they didn't like it, so they got rid of him so that they can keep the problem going, because Boehner's very happy right now to start blaming Obama for the fiscal cliff without solving the problem, because it's not about solving the problem. It's about getting you to pay for it and to be afraid of it and to be discomforted by the fact that they're, you know, fighting on your behalf, but they don't ever solve the problem. It just requires the will. That's all. We know how to solve these problems.
Yep. You're absolutely correct.
And speaking of waste, I just want to bring up, you know, I heard there was instances in New York where these teachers are laid off, or not laid off, but they've been suspended, you know, from their duties because they did something wrong, and they're actually getting paid. So they're actually, you know, I read an article where, you know, they're in this room playing cards, getting paid a full salary, but they're on suspension. But they're still getting paid their whole salary.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll be on suspension for months and still getting paid, you know.
That's the whole union conversation right there, Robert.
Yep.
In the real world, people like that get fired. They go away. And then that money's used to hire somebody who will do the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Precisely.
Yeah. No, this is – I think it's a great conversation because it's forced, even for myself, who's been around guns all my life and who a lot of things are just common sense, it's forced me to really dig and get my dialogue, you know, tuned up for the conversation because it is a very tricky battleground that we're walking into, you know, with the left, because the left isn't – I mean, this is a maybe not the right thing to say. It's not politically correct, but and people would probably get vicious and, you know, saying you're insane to say that. But if they really wanted to save kids' lives, they would have done it years ago. When we implemented Homeland Security, all this crap would have been done.
Well, if they really wanted to save kids' lives, then they wouldn't be advocating for killing them in the safest place in the world, their own mother's womb. I mean, if you're willing to kill 4,000 kids in their mother's womb every day, do you really expect that someone's not going to go into a school and try to kill 20 or 30 or 40 kids? I mean, you know, if your culture values life so little, then you're going to get more of these things. And at core, I mean, we can talk about all the solutions to solve it and whether guns should be registered or controlled or not, or whether schools should have egress and regress points that are appropriate and all this kind of stuff. But ultimately, it comes down to what kind of culture do you live in. And I guarantee you that when we were a frontier culture and every home had a Bible and a long rifle in it, you didn't have these kinds of massacres. You know, so, you know, who are we and who do we want to be? Do we want to be dependent slaves who rely on somebody else for our security and we don't want any risk in life? Or do we want to actually live life to the fullest and take the responsibility to protect ourselves and protect our children individually, as a family, and as a community?
Well, I think that was one of the I got to tell you, it was interesting that he went down that road, Wayne LaPierre.
Right.
You know, he went down that whole moral culture thing, you know.
Yeah.
I was surprised that he did, and I was very pleasantly surprised that he did, because that's exactly right. I mean, we've got a culture of death surrounding us, and we wonder why we have this perpetration of continued death, mass casualties and all of this, because we are inundated with it completely around us. And the fact is, we are inundated it from a perspective that there is never any consequences associated with it.
Yep.
Well, he said, I thought when he first, when he was start, went down that, my son and I were watching the video together in my office. And when he started going down the whole social issues, you know, the games and the society and the movies, and I'm going, whoa, man, he's not just going to get attacked by the leftover guns. He's going to get attacked by the gaming industry, the movie industry. I mean, he opened it up, and I was going, wow, he's really going deep on this one. And then he got to the solution, but I actually was a little surprised that he opened that door on that conversation, because it took a lot of cojones to do that.
It sure did, but it was. It was really, it was dead on. It, you know, and we Americans, we as parents, we are culpable for all of this, because we're out there buying these freaking games for our kids and these movies.
Well, I also think, look, in and of themselves, these things aren't that bad if someone, you know, understands how to use it. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, we used to play guns all the time and play war, you know, shoot each other with sticks.
Like,
but I've never had the urge to go in and kill people randomly. So, you know, there are other problems that you know, cultural problems that need to be addressed. But the simple fact is, when you give a Nobel Peace Prize to your president who orders drone strikes on children across the globe, that's one problem. I mean, the fact is that this guy, this psycho killed 20 kids and, you know, six adults, himself and his mother, and that's 28, you know, lives that were extinguished. But, you know, the president killed 176 kids with drone strikes on his order, and we make him man of the year.
Yeah.
Well, when your priorities are that screwed up, what do you think is going to happen?
Exactly.
They also talk about gaming, and, you know, it isn't like, and of course, he made a very good point. We don't know if there's another 100 of these types of people who have these, you know, death and destruction massacre, you know, triggers in them. And of course, conspiracy theories have loved to run with that one. But, you know, they talk about, you know, violent games. You know, my son has played games for years, and, you know, he's gone to war and he's done his duty. He's come home and, you know, he's not plotting to take out, you know, 50 kids anywhere. I mean, there's a multiple things that tie together, you know, that create this dynamics for this insanity. Why do people snap? What was the it started with an M without me having to get up and go to my computer again, but the guy who blew up the school back in 1927, you know, blew up his farm, blew up the school, blew himself up. You want to talk about insanity. On the 14th of December, there's this Chinese guy who stabbed 23 children in a school. And the reason was is he was studying the Mayan calendar sphere, and the world was going to end. And he had heard that if you want to get in the news, you got to kill children. Because he wanted to get in the news so he could tell the story about the Mayan calendar. I mean, that's some pretty messed up crap.
That ship sailed. That ship sailed 27 minutes ago. Well, I guess no. The Maya are on Central Time, so I guess it sailed.
Well, and now he's
going to
be
33 minutes.
Now he'll be executed, because in China they don't mess around like they do in America. But you know, and the other thing too is China did an article, and they were criticizing America over our guns and said we need to deal with this. And here's a country that has forced government murder of children, and they also arrested 93 people just for talking about the Mayan calendar issue. And they're over there telling us what we should do.
And by the way, just so that people know, you guys are right, and I wasn't being flippant about it, but we do have this culture of death within these United States. And, you know, we're more concerned with the quality of life than we are with the fact that we have a right to life. And, you know, with this culture of death that we have, and the idea that you can get by with it, you know, without what was the word I used earlier? I'm a little mind dead after all today. Without consequence, you know, and by and large, the fact of the matter is that the game area isn't the only place that people get by with it without consequences. I mean, you know, we look at people who are able to appeal to the fact that they committed these crimes because they're insane, and now they get the,
right.
You know, oh man, there's so much to this, and we're going to go down just so that you know that
it's a deep rabbit hole.
Yeah, there is. And one of the things we're going to do is, you know, we talked briefly today on my show this morning about a constitutional form of militia. What if we had an actual constitutional standing army and that sort of thing, what would it really look like? And people need to know and understand these so that, you know, when they're talking about these arguments, when people say the only people who get to have these quote unquote assault weapons is the militia. Well, who's the militia? People think, yeah. Well, but
they've got
this convoluted idea that it's the National Guard.
Nope. It's not. And that's the thing is we're out of touch with the Constitution. We don't understand the law.
Yep.
I mean, you know, there are all these codes, you know, and all these little rules and stuff. But if they don't comport with the Supreme Court, the law of the land, then they're invalid. I mean, there's a hierarchy here, and that is the supreme law of the land, and it still stands, and we need to adhere to it. But the other thing is that when you have this cultural degradation, you lose hope. When your money's being debased at an unprecedented rate, when you're engaged in wars that are unsustainable, when your, quote, social safety nets are trillions of dollars more than the total gross domestic product of the planet, you know, people just think that there's no tomorrow and you have nothing to hope for. And when you become hopeless, you become nihilistic. When you become nihilistic, life has no value, and then it's easy for a young man to snap. And the fact is, what we fail to understand is we're pummeling them with all this, you know, self-esteem, your special 14th place prize, you can't do any wrong crap, okay? And generally speaking, at least I know for men, you know, your frontal lobe isn't fully developed until you're about 21 or 22 years old, so they can't understand consequences. And then, you know, without understanding consequences, you end up with these basically adult adolescents with no hope. Well, that's a very dangerous thing because, you know, the worst thing is for a lion to know how strong he is. You know, and so when you have these young men with all this pent-up aggression and this testosterone and nowhere to channel it and no understanding of consequences and feeling that they're really special because they've been told that they can do no wrong all their lives and all they do is entertain themselves, what do you think's going to happen?
And no father.
Exactly.
You know, I've said that. I say that all the time sarcastically. You know, when I run into somebody that's a diphead in public or whatever, doing something stupid, saying something stupid, or, you know, somebody riding a bicycle down the sidewalk, forcing a woman to have to step into the street, my common thing is I go, who raised you? And the problem is nobody raised them. That's the problem.
Yep.
You know, nobody taught them those fundamental things where you had consequences for your actions or how to be responsible. Or my dad, you know, the Boy Scouts. I mean, it's amazing. You know, I grew up in the Boy Scouts. I grew up, you know, learning about weapons and guns and huntings and responsibility and proper storage and safety. And we were taught, you know, I just remember my dad all my life, you know, be prepared, you know, think it through. What's the end result? You know, teaching you, you know, the cause and effect and how to plan safety. You know, I was huge in the Boy Scouts, and that's just what you did from Cub Scouts to Boy Scouts to even in school. You know, we don't teach anything anymore, and where in the hell are the parents? You know, and many are there? How many?
But let me say, you say where are the parents, and we're in a society where both parents have to work to make a living.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, it's this sword that's swinging, this pendulum that's swinging both ways. We're trying to work both ends of the candle to make ends meet. Our kids are suffering, and there's no place to turn. And it, you know, it boils down to, I'm going to say it, yes, there is a conspiracy to take us out, and it's working.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and Randy, I want to challenge the sociology, the platform of both people had to work. There's a lot of people who chose lifestyle over their children in the
yep.
past
generation. We need the 60-inch plasma television and three cars
and
the 4,000 square foot house.
Yeah, I remember when my wife and I, you know, we had two kids, and I remember, you know, she was working, making good money, you know, union wages in her job. And I remember my kids hit a certain age, and we had family. We lived on property where grandma was there and all that kind of stuff. And we made two decisions. One, to put them in private Christian school, expensive. And two,
yes,
bring my wife and bring my wife home. And for a young family in this modern era, that was flipping. I lost that, you know, that cost me in lost wages and outgo of money, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year that I mm-hmm. didn't have to put into lifestyle. And I worked like a freaking dog to produce that environment for my family because that was important to us.
Absolutely.
You know, because
I want to speak for the folks, though. You know, and I understand the point, but there truly are, you know, a lot of folks out there who do need to have both parents working in order to make ends meet. I mean, now there is the case where people do want to have an affluent lifestyle. I know that does exist, and I do see that, you know, personally in some of my, not my personal life with myself, but for the people who are around me, and I do see that, but I also know a more, you know, not an equal amount, but more so where both have to work just in order, you know, to make ends meet for the kids.
But that's the result of monetary debasement. You see, we go back to the Fed again. You end the Fed because it is breaking the family apart because the money is so worthless that now you got to have both parents outside of the house. And so no one's raising the kids except, you know, the school and the television and the video games. And then this happens and you go, oh, I wonder what happened. Well, I mean, you know, wake up, people. We're doing this to ourselves.
But first it was the generation. I'm talking about my generation. You know what I'm saying? I just not to counter what Robert said, but today is different than my generation. We're able to make that decision. I work like a dog, though, too, to make that happen, you know. But I, you know, I don't want to say everybody should do what we did, but I'm saying a lot of people spend money they don't have and live in lifestyles they don't need to live in this country. You know,
it's all part of the training.
There are those that do that, and if, you know, me and my wife made the decision that as long as our kids were at home, my wife, one of us, would be home with our kids, and we had to sacrifice a lot for that.
You bet.
But you know, but when the kids were at school and stuff, we said, you know what, if you want to have a job outside the home, once the kids are, you know, not needing that direct attention, then it's fine. And so, yeah, we made that same decision as well, and it's certainly costly. But I'm not so sure we could make that same decision right now.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's what and that's on one hand, I'm saying my generation, I was able to squeak it by. Today, I can equate to what Robert was saying is people almost have no choice. It is so bad now. Do you remember? I don't remember. I remember not that long ago that $20,000 was the median income in this family in this country.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. But the fact
is, if you make $50,000 and you have a family today, you're broke, dog.
Yep. And in certain metropolitan areas, if you don't make $200,000, you're broke. You know, it's pretty crazy. But on that note, gentlemen, Patriots, I've got to bow out, but I appreciate the conversation. Keep up the good work, and thank you very much, Robert.
Well, thank you very much, Rex, for coming on. And if you do have just a few moments, if you could tell the audience what you and Tex have going on for Sunday night, that'd be great.
Oh, I appreciate it. Well, the Tex and Rex show is 10 p.m. Eastern this Sunday, December 23rd, and we're going to, do a little Christmas show. So we'll see how the topic unfurls, but we'll be focusing pretty heavily on ending Boehner, giving him a Christmas present and sending him back to Ohio.
Oh, no, you can't do that. I don't want him back here.
Sorry. He came from your neck of the woods, and we're sending him back to your neck of the woods. You all deal with him up there.
Maybe he could just go fishing or something, trying his shelter.
Golfing and bars, that's Boehner's thing.
That's fine. As long as he's not in the house, I'll be happy.
Well, there you go. Well, that's what I would. Thank you very much again, Rex, for coming in tonight. And for the folks, definitely check that out Sunday evening, 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern time. Take care, Rex.
All right, good night, y'all.
Thanks. And if I don't talk to you before then, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Randy and Robert, this is an important kind of ties in the whole socioeconomic topic to the gun and the right and responsibility to be able to protect ourselves. It's getting ugly, and it's going to get uglier, and it's going to get worse because we haven't even seen the inflation's going to hit from everything they've done, from the bailout, you know, from TARP to the bailouts to QE 1, 2, 3, infinity, and what's going on. And if they raise the debt ceiling again and print more money again on top of QE 3, you know, our dollar is going to be worth about 30 cents on the dollar, and it's going to get worse. Crime's going to get worse. You know, anger's going to get worse. One of the things in my research that I've done on people who've snapped, and if you look at a lot of these people who have snapped or people who have, you know, lost their job, lost their tenure, you know, one guy, you know, killed people in his college. He was a professor. They let him go. You know, there's just all these environments, and we don't know what makes people snap, but a lot of these violent situations, you know, guys going in and shooting up restaurants and things like that, including the ex-Texas House rep, that guy had gone through some economic calamities. So even from, and that's not a scare tactic, what I'm saying, this is factual. You know, you can track these down. You know, when things get ugly economically and people start losing their homes and then their marriages and mm-hmm. they go through that kind of insanity, people snap. And they strike back at society. The right and responsibility to, you know, to be a well-armed militia, you know what I mean, in our country is going to be more important because there's never going to be enough police to be on every corner to make sure that every neighborhood is safe. They can't do it. And I know they're trying to do it with Homeland Security, but I don't think they're doing it for us. Right, Randy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, it's there's so many factors to all of this. You know, we're basically just scratching the itch for the most part because the facts that we are living in such a degraded society, you know, where immorality is absolutely rampant. The fact of the matter is, there's got to be some moral changes. If we're ever going to truly see a lasting change that's going to be sweeping and really be meaningful, then we're going to have to see a change at the moral level. Otherwise, there truly is no hope because, you know, if there's no standards, then there's no way to expect that anything is ever going to get any better. And, you know, there's only one standard giver. And so for people not to recognize that is to really just prolong the agony here.
Well, you make a very good point, and we want to, you know, study. Go ahead.
Well, as you say, you know, when it comes to morality, though, I mean, you know, for each individual, that's pretty subjective, you know, where, you know, each person carries, you know, their own morality, and we're seeing it as an absolute.
But Robert, that's the point. That's why I'm not a libertarian, is because if we have no basis, no standard of morality, then we have nothing that we can really gel on because there is no standard. And who is this? And that's why it's so important to understand the premise that this country was based upon, you know, the legislation, the jurisprudence of these United States was based upon the Judeo-Christian ethics straight out of the Old Testament, because it's a great standard. But if we just have no more, if everything's morally relevant, then we have no basis upon which we can agree on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and they talk about natural law, Judeo-Christian principles, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. But here's a point I was going to make. And this is a part of life that I lived with, because my grandparents were all born in the early turn of the century, you know, survived the First World War, the Great Depression, you know, the big Dust Bowl, you know, severe poverty, and my parents were children in that era and grew out of it. My dad was a Korean War vet. We had a Second World War, Korean War. And yet, in that, in all of that tragedy, the Great Depression, you know, all of that crap, you know, outside of the Prohibition era, our culture improved, our economy improved, our families grew and prospered, and we became the most powerful nation on the face of the earth through all of that crap. Now, you know, almost since the Vietnam War forward, every time we go through some kind of yeah. dynamic, some kind of paradigm shift, our society mm-hmm. goes backwards. And the hopelessness that comes with it. You know, that's
well,
all these
suicides. Part of that came out, and of course it had, you know, the Vietnam War was in the midst of it. The reason why you kind of equate it, because really the whole sexual revolution, the whole thing where the moral degradation of our society really got its foothold in the early 60s. And, of course, you know, some of that came out of some of the things that were going on in the 50s. I mean, it didn't just all of a sudden one day happen. There was some things boiling. But that's the era, you know, the Pepsi generation. You know, if it feels good, do it. Make love, not war. There's some serious consequences to what happened out of those 1960s. In fact, the Illinois State Constitution was ratified in what I call the dope smoking 70s, because 1970 was when the Illinois State Constitution, our last one, was ratified. And when you read some of it, you got it, but man, these guys had to be high on something, because one of the articles in the Illinois State Constitution says nothing in this Constitution shall be construed as limiting the power of the legislature. That's in our Constitution.
What kind of idiot signed off on that?
Yeah, well, like I said, they must have been high on something.
Well, I say this a lot, and I say it jokingly, but I'm very serious about it. Here, you wonder what's wrong with this country? Do you realize who runs our country right now? They're all them freaking party hippie freaks from the 60s. That's
exactly.
Who's running our country. That's who's running our damn schools. That's bureaucrats. The bureaucrats in our school administration. You know, these people are messed up, and their concept of what they want to turn this society into is messed up.
Yep.
You know, and they are running, they run everything. That's the baby boomer generation, largest generation in the history of the world, and it is in control. You know, and hopefully they're, you know, and I hear they're retiring, you know, at a rapid rate, but they ain't retiring fast enough, in my opinion. They need to get the hell out of all the power positions, and the next generation, you know, the people who are in their 40s and 50s, you know, need to, like, step up.
Well, and this is why it's so important to tap into the youth and educate them and get them involved in taking back their nation. Basically, you know, the nation's over for us, but the next generation that's coming has to deal with all the garbage that's being hand-delivered to them, and that's why I'm so dedicated in pushing the young constitutionalists and helping them to, you know, to learn and to develop leadership and all that, because guess what? It's going to be all on them, and if we don't teach them, I don't know where this country's going to end up.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I'm still looking to get a hold of Joshua about seeing if he'd like to come on and talk about his efforts for the young constitutionalists. Actually, I see him on
Facebook right here, and I sent a message waiting for a reply. So we'll see where it goes back to us. Still interested in having that conversation.
Absolutely.
If you've got some time, so I know he's got classes. So.
Yeah, let me know if you need some help with that. I mean, if you know, whatever, I'll make sure I get with Joshua and I help him work out those details. Yeah,
that sounds great.
Because I'm real excited about this young guy. You know, I mean, he's really demonstrated some outstanding leadership already in some of the things that he's done, and so I'm real excited about that. And you know, and it's young men like him that does give me hope for, you know, the future of this country. And so I'm real excited about that. And of course, you know, what's interesting is, you know, he comes out of that Ron Paul revolution too. So, you know, there's a lot to be said about it.
Well, speaking of that, a lot to be said, unfortunately it's not to be able to be
not
much
be
more said.
Said
yeah, much more said tonight, because I do see we only have about 5 more minutes left in the recorded time. So what I'd like to do is, Randy, while we still have you here, if you'd like to tell us what's going on for your next show, and then, Chris, if we'll move on to you, and what any parting things you'd like to discuss, maybe some upcoming things you have going on for the Coalition of Freedom page on Facebook, and then I'll close out the show. So, Randy, go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Robert. And
you're welcome.
The show we did today, we actually, because Larry Pratt wasn't able to make it for whatever reason, I've got to communicate with him and find out and get things rescheduled, because I think it's important. We took the show today, and we took opportunity to actually do back-to-back shows. So we did part one. I got it reloaded up there, and part one's on there today. And within the next day or so, part two will be out there. And I think it's some important information, you know, gives some background, some historical stuff that's going on. And so I really appreciate the time that you've given us, and this is an important. We cannot fall on our faces on this one. We must rise up to the occasion, and there's quite a little bit of things that are going on. So I'm pretty excited, and appreciate all that you're doing here, Robert. God bless, and if we don't talk before then, have a blessed Merry Christmas.
You too. Thank you very much, Randy. Take care. Thanks again. And, of course, you're welcome to stay to the rest of the show. Of course, listening to the closing song that I'll have tonight by Julia Newman. But before I do that, I'm bringing it over to Chris.
Well, I flapped my jaw quite a bit today, including starting a Randy show. But I think we're on it. I think we have the right conversation going on. I think we have the right focus. You know, this school shooting is not the issue. The issue is, you know, what's being done about it and what they're trying to do about it. Sad situation. You know, we've got a lot of crisis in this country at all levels. We could have conversation every day about some facet of what's going to hell in a handbasket in our country. You know, it's Christmas season, and I think that people are hurting, and I think that they're looking for hope. You know, all I'm doing is just fighting for what's right. I mean, that just seems to be what mode I'm in right now. And that's just, you know, doing the battle for the truth and information and educating people so that we can, you know, keep this great country.
And folks, and that is, of course, talking about the Coalition of Freedom Facebook page. Just if you are a Facebook user, go into the search engine there and just type in Coalition of Freedom. And go ahead, check it out. It's a great page. It's got a lot of great information, links, videos, things of that nature. And so what I'll do is get ready to close out the show by thanking everyone for coming in tonight. Thank you for all the people who've called in and all the people in the chat, participation, and listening on the archive. And once again, what I'd like to do is direct folks to the www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com and go to the Get Involved page. And there you'll see a little red button that says Save an Elephant on there, where you could go to the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. And for only $50 a year, you can foster a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. And I think it would make a wonderful Christmas gift for a loved one. And so, as I said, I'm going to close out the music with someone going to be interviewing here in the near future, in the beginning of January, and that is Julia Newman. And so here is a taste of her music, and I believe she also has a website, which is www.julianewman.com. That's Julia and then Newman, N-E-W-M-A-N-N.com. So take care, everyone. Good night, and of course, Merry Christmas. Hope to see you again, and take care.